Exposing free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Thursday, the 18th of November, year of our Lord 2021, day 612 of the emergency. And today we're going to take a look at new hopeful updates to this mandate. We've had OSHA now, after the Biden administration was defiant after losing in court. Of course, you know that if they had won, it would all be about judicial supremacy. Oh, we must obey everything the courts tell us. But when they lose, they say, well, we'll continue with this. And yet the agency now has posted that they are putting this order on hold. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the other two aspects of the vaccine mandate, because there's three components of this when we come back. Stay with us. One of the things that I find very interesting about this news about OSHA broke yesterday afternoon. And as of last night, you realize that most of mainstream media had not even talked about it. This is not something they want to discuss. Let me give you an example. You can find it further down early evening after this came out yesterday afternoon. You can find it early evening. You could find it on Fox way, way down. You could find it on the Hill, way, way down. But let me tell you where you could not find any news about OSHA pulling back on this mandate. You couldn't find anything about it at the Washington Post. Nothing at Reuters. Nothing at The Guardian or The New York Times. The New York Times, by the way, did have a very fascinating and important article about how Americans' appetites for leather and SUVs worsens the Amazon deforestation. Yeah, right. Okay. The liberal fantasies about the environment have only been exceeded by what has happened with this pandemic, for the same reasons, of course. So you couldn't find it at the New York Times. You could find that news about leather and SUVs killing all the trees in the Amazon. You couldn't find anything about OSHA backing down on CNN. Or on USA Today, or on Politico, or on BBC, or on the NPR, or in the Daily Mail. You get the idea? Yes, I actually went to all those disgusting places for your benefit, just so you don't have to. Because you're not going to find any real news there that's important. Any news that's going to hint of a retrenchment on this tyranny. And let me just underscore here, there's three components to this. You know, we have the executive order, and he did put out an executive order, and he did publish it in the Federal Registry about federal employees, the military and other federal employees. He did that. And then they had another executive order where they put that out, and they did put it in the Federal Registry, and that's about federal contractors, anybody that sells to the government. And there's another component to that, I guess you could say, that is also being challenged legally, and that is the CMS component for hospitals, the Medicare-Medicaid component. They're using that financial blackmail against hospitals to get them to force people who have worked for 18 to 20 months during this pandemic, so-called, and have seen patients, and they've seen patients from the so-called pandemic and from the so-called vaccine. And they've said, no thanks, on the front line. So they're using that to force them. Then there's the third component, and that's what this OSHA thing is about. And that is about coercing with penalties, massive fines, any private company that doesn't do business with the government, is not hired by the government, but you have 100 or more employees, and that's what this is about. So OSHA has suspended enforcement of this. The Fifth Circuit of Court of Appeals just railed against them end of last week. I told you about that. Said it was staggeringly overbroad. Said they and ordered it to take no steps to implement or to enforce the mandate until further court order. Meanwhile, you had the Biden administration. The White House said in a press release, they said, well, we think people should not wait. We think employers should go ahead and ignore this ruling from the court. Again, they will take cherry pick the laws and things that allow them to do what they wish and ignore the ones that prohibit them from doing what they wish. Whether you're talking about the Constitution or whether you're talking about their imagined authority of judicial supremacy. Even judicial supremacy is thrown aside by the Biden administration in order to get people to take this vaccine. Isn't that amazing? At least 27 U.S. states, as well as private employers, as well as religious organizations, as well as many other groups, have sued the Biden administration. Said, you don't have authority for this. And the court says, you don't have authority for this. And of course, the court was not just looking at that. The court decision had multiple components to it. One of those was spot on. The idea that this is all predicated on the claim of an emergency. And they said, well, you waited 2 months to do this, and then you are not going to enforce it for another 2 months. Who do you think you're kidding about this being an emergency? You even delayed, and I think the it was a one-month delay for the contractors in terms of that, but not for the military, not for federal employees. So they respect no system, even their phony so-called constitutional system where the judiciary and the Supreme Court rule everyone. No, they don't even pay any attention to that. They've now shelved that. And they point out the agency said that it still remains, quote, confident in its authority, unquote, to impose a mandate as they're shelving it. It says on their website that they've set it aside. But, you know, they're still confident they have the authority to do this. And they will continue to accept general public comments on the mandate until December the 6th. They said, while the announcement does not mean the controversy is resolved, it does mean that employers will not be able to shift the blame for their own vaccine mandate policies to the federal government. Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massey said companies should cease implementation of this OSHA vaccine mandate under Biden because OSHA itself has ceased the mandate. That's right. You know, when we go back and we look at this, isn't it amazing that I just think back about the Trump Department of Justice and about Obamacare, right? Obamacare, you had John Roberts, a Republican judge, Republican-appointed judge by George W. Bush, who said, well, we're going to call it a tax. That's what we're going to do. We know that you don't have the authority to force people to buy private insurance that we define. So we'll call it a tax. And then after a very long time and a lot of wrangling, finally the Republican Congress said, well, we're going to remove the financial penalty. So therefore the tax is gone. So therefore the basis for its authority is gone. And they won in court at a lower court, just like, you know, we've had the Fifth Circuit Court slap this thing down. And Eric Holder, who was the Attorney General for Obama, appealed that. And throughout the Trump administration, both of his attorneys general, Sessions as well as Barr, never stopped that appeal. If they would have dropped that appeal, Obamacare would have been gone. But what we have now with this medical state of emergency, this is far worse. This is the death panels and everything else, the coercion that we always were the most concerned about Obamacare. At least I was the most concerned about that aspect of it. It wasn't about the money. The money was bad enough. But it was the government control of our health care, which is what we have now. And using health care, the government is controlling everything. I mean, this is what has happened with his executive order 612 days ago by Trump. What that has done is that has created Obamacare on steroids, the worst aspects of it. And so what you see is, and it was still at the, it was at the top of the Drudge Report all day yesterday, this whole idea of ping pong. Ping pong balls will decide the fate of this. What is behind that? I mean, really, it is kind of like ping pong, isn't it? When you get into the judicial system, you know, the ball is over here on the left side and they whack it to the right. The right whacks it back and it's going back and forth, left and right, left and right, left and right, as it's going through the various levels of the judicial supremacy system. We never know what we're going to get. And so I, you know, ping pong ball and playing ping pong, that is a good analogy. That's not exactly what they're talking about. They're talking about the fact that they said there's going to be a random drawing. They're going to have numbers painted on the ping pong balls to see which court gets to decide next on this. But of course, it's not going to be a public drawing, so we just have to take their word for it that it's random. Yeah, they're going to bounce this thing from the left court to the right court to the left court to the right court. It's a great analogy. And it's total nonsense to think that this is randomized. You believe that? But let me tell you, I think the better analogy is still, this is a Forrest Gump government system. Because when you pitch this stuff out to these different courts that are all political and they're you know, it's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get out of these black-robed justices. That's really what this is. It's a Forrest Gump system of ping pong, you know, hitting it back and forth. And so that's what's going to happen. Right now, you know, it's the ball is in our court. And it's not to say, I mean, the arguments, the legal arguments were very sound. They were constitutional. But, of course, the left isn't going to play that game. The left will just say this is what we want to have happen, and, you know, just as we've seen over and over again with Supreme Court decisions, they don't base it on law. They base it on what they want it to be. So going to Oklahoma, what is happening with the military? Again, new commander will not require the COVID vaccine. I've talked about this several times. But the important thing about this is that as I was talking to Matt Truella yesterday and his doctrine of the lesser magistrate. I mean, this really is a situation of a lesser magistrate. You know, you have a hierarchical system within the military, and this is within that system. So this is a lesser magistrate. But at the same time, there is an element of the Ninth and Tenth Amendment in this because this is a state National Guard. So this is kind of a strange situation. But it's the closest that we've had to a lesser magistrate, but it also has the elements of the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. Now, the Pentagon and Pentagon spokesman Kirby, John Kirby, is saying, well, we pay for it, so we're going to tell you what to do. So that's the way this always happens. It always comes down to that, whether you're talking about putting males in female showers and dressing rooms or whether you're talking about forcing the vaccine. It always comes down to who pays for it, who's got the money. And that's why the Federal Reserve is at the very essence of all of this. It's why the first time InfoWars is ever censored with anything. It was my report on the Federal Reserve, censored by YouTube. Because the money creates strings that they can use to control you. It's the money. And if they've got the strings tied to you all over the place, you become nothing but a puppet. And they pull those strings. And so it's time for us to cut those strings and to say, I'm a real boy, because they're a bunch of Pinocchios when they're telling you they've got the authority to do this stuff. It's nothing but the strings. They are the Pinocchios. So we need to understand it's the money. The money is how they control us. And as I've said, 612 days ago, there was two aspects of this executive order declaring a national state of emergency. It was the money and the strings attached to that. And it was the idea that this is an emergency, I can do whatever I wish. And we're still operating under that. So you got governors who are still running with this state of emergency everywhere, everywhere. And they are Republican as well as Democrat governors. We're going to have, coming up in the third hour, we're going to be talking to a sheriff from Arizona, who I've talked to before, Sheriff David Hathaway. And he's pointing out there that it's the Republican governor who continues to extend this state of emergency, and they're shutting down anybody who opposes them. in terms of stopping the state of emergency. You look at what Gavin Newsom is doing in California. It's based on the state of emergency. And yesterday when I was talking to Matt Truella about that, he mentioned, and we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up, one town called Oroville, where the people in the city, town council, said, we're going to be a constitutional free zone. We're going to be a constitution zone here, and we're not going to allow this state of emergency to be continued. It's been going on for 18, 20 months, and we're not going to allow this to continue on in perpetuity. It's based on the idea this is an emergency. It's obviously not an emergency. And so we have to stand up to that. But it's always been about the emergency and about the money and the strings that come with it. So this is the approach that the Pentagon is going to take. Say, well, you're still federally funded. So we're going to tell you what to do, or we'll take your money. Well, you just have to cut those strings. But they have unlimited amounts of money that they can bribe people with because of the federal government, because of the Federal Reserve, rather, and because of their being able to operate without any fiscal responsibility or accountability. The fact that they can just print this money up by the trillions, as they've done since this all began. They did it under Trump. They're doing it under Biden. Trillion here, trillion there, several trillion there. That's the way they control people. And, you know, if the money becomes worthless, or even if it becomes worth less, still worth something, but worth less, not completely worthless, although it's getting there fast. But if it comes, if it's worth less than it was last year, they just print more of it. And they don't even have to print it anymore. They just roll the numbers out electronically. So in an interview by mainstream media, the Brigadier General Thomas Mancino, who is in charge of the Oklahoma National Guard, he was put there by the governor, he said to them, when he's being interviewed by the Washington Post, he said, quote, I did not initiate a civilian military crisis just because I thought it was cool, okay, right? He is vaccinated. He has encouraged his troops to get vaccinated whenever they want, he said in an interview. He said, where we differ with the Pentagon directive is my governor said, it's a personal choice on whether you do. And he is right. The Oklahoma National Guard is under the control of the governor. Even if it is under control of the Pentagon, even if that were true, if it was under the sole control of the Pentagon, people who are soldiers, people who are law enforcement officers, swear an oath to the Constitution, and that oath says that they will defend the Constitution. And that's what they have a duty to do. So the Pentagon spokesman, John Kirby, said, did not address the questions, seeking clarity about how the Defense Department planned to inform the roughly 8,200 members of the Oklahoma National Guard that it should ignore Mancino, their direct commander's policy, and instead comply with a federal directive to get vaccinated. So here's a guy who's a spokesperson, and he doesn't say what they're going to tell people. He hasn't decided yet what he's going to spoke. He's got no idea what they're going to say. Yeah, they got some people working on coming up with some interesting lies to tell them about this. Oklahoma's policy could be a roadmap, and here's the important thing, why I'm going back and revisiting this, by the way. Oklahoma's policy could be a roadmap for other governors wishing to fight Biden's mandates. And they say in this article, other GOP governors, but there's at least one Democrat governor who doesn't agree with this mandate. She's from Kansas. And so they said more than five National Guard commanders in other states have contacted officials in Oklahoma expressing interest in a similar policy. Let me repeat that. We've now got five National Guard commanders in other states. After this guy has stood up, and that's exactly what Matt was talking about yesterday, the doctrine of the lesser magistrate. He said, the important thing is for us to stand up, even if we're the only one doing it. And if we stand up, there's a lot of other people who see this injustice or see what is happening here, see this power grab. And that will embolden them, perhaps, to do the same thing. To raise that standard of integrity. To stand up for the law. To stand up for individual liberty. When one does it, others are now interested. Five other states have contacted Oklahoma about this. And They said that anonymously, of course. So multiple Republican governors have also spoken to Governor Stitt there in Oklahoma, who is the one who is really in charge in that situation. So we got a lot of other governors, and we got five other National Guard commanders have contacted them. This is how this begins. All right, let's get back to this court case here, because it's not just the court case about OSHA. And we see these different numbers, and I look at these different headlines, and it's like, what is going on? Why can't people count? I mean, at the very beginning of this, you had 27 state attorneys general saying that they were going to push back against the Biden mandates. And particularly the third one, you know, the 100-plus employees of private companies that are not contractors even to the federal government. So you had 27 AGs said they were going to do it. And so I keep seeing all this stuff. Well, you know, 27, 26, 22, 20. It's like, what's going on with this? Just understand, this is multifaceted. Just as I pointed out, you've got the executive order for federal employees in the military. Then you have the executive order for federal contractors. Then you have the private companies. And then there's even more aspects of this. 22 states have joined in these the private mandate so far. And then there's 10 states led by Missouri who filed a lawsuit against the health worker mandate in federal court, because that's another aspect of this. Blackmailing people over Medicare, Medicaid benefits, CMS, right? Financial. Again, it's always financial. You can incentivize people. You can give them massive amounts of money, which is what Trump did. Or you can then start to threaten to pull it back, which is what Biden is doing. Isn't that kind of interesting? It's kind of counterintuitive, isn't it? Didn't you really think that, you know, the Republicans were about controlling spending? No, the Republicans control you by spending. The Democrats control you by fining you. You understand? That's another thing that kind of is counterintuitive about this if you come at it from a partisan perspective. So the Associated Press reports that there's another coalition of 12 states that is working on a different aspect of this. So we're getting multiple aspects of this. And so you're having these different numbers, 27, 22, 10, 12, all these different things, because people are suing about all these different types of things. For the most part, because, again, everybody's bought into the idea that we have a hierarchical government, that we have judicial supremacy. So, again, 26 states are suing about the private employee mandate as well. And so others are suing about the hospital mandates, and there's lawsuits from federal workers about the first executive order. Still in Oklahoma, we have a state representative, Rod Standridge, who has introduced a bill in Oklahoma. He calls it the Citizen Health Mandate Protection Act. It is aimed at both private and public sectors. I wonder if it includes federal. It seeks to hold all employers financially liable for a minimum of $1 million for each and every injury resulting from a vaccine or medical treatment that was mandated as a condition of employment. This is the approach, and this approach is being filed out there now in Oklahoma as well as in Idaho. This is the way the legislatures should proceed, and you should contact the legislators in your area and tell them you want them to do this. It's only reasonable, isn't it? If you're going to mandate something that has a health effect on it, you can't sue the pharmaceutical companies. Fauci made sure of that. He took away your trial by jury in case you're injured there. Think about that. Right? Going back to 1986, 35 years ago, Fauci took away trial by jury. That's really what we're talking about when he gave legal immunity to the vaccine companies. So he took away trial by jury. You need to be able to get compensated if somebody coerces you into something where you are injured. And you should still be able to sue these vaccine companies if they act maliciously, if they cut corners, if they have been negligent, and on and on and on. So they've taken that away from them, but we need to add this back, and we need to go on record, and we need to make it clear. You know, if I was writing the bill, it wouldn't pass. But I would just write the bill, and I would say, well, you cannot force people to use a product for which the manufacturer has no liability. You cannot force the people to use a product for which the manufacturer has no liability. Just make it that simple. It wouldn't pass, but at least you would make the point to people, because a lot of people don't realize that. When I realized that, I became an anti-vaxxer. I'm proud to say I'm an anti-vaxxer. You want to get rid of that liability protection? Then we can talk. Until that point, there's absolutely nothing to talk about. If you've got an industry that does not believe in its product and also has no consequences for corners that it cuts, don't even talk to me about taking it. So anyway, he goes on to say, many Oklahomans do not know the COVID vaccines have already been given liability protection from the federal government. That's right. They need to make that clear. If an employee is required to receive the vaccine or some other medical treatment as a condition of employment, he writes, this is the Oklahoma legislator who put this bill in. He said it causes that person harm. Our citizens need to know that they'll have some recourse that will provide them with some meaningful relief. And that's what my legislation will do. You know, we've had Biden, who came out, nothing says that this is a phony emergency, better than the fact that he said, I've given you a lot of time. You've had a lot of time here to do this. So now I'm going to force you to take this. Well, then it's not
an emergency.
It isn't.
Everybody to get from city.
It's not an emergency if you're going to do that. If you're going to tell me, I've waited a lot of time. I've been very patient with you. Why would you do that if it's an emergency? This is a public health emergency. Everybody's going to die. They keep telling, well, why would you wait? Why would you say, guess what? I'll give you a free donut. Does that do it for you, little Johnny? You take a free donut here? Think of all the lotteries, the nonsense incentives that they've done. They've been so patient with us. It's not an emergency. Anyway, he said this mandate, the legislator says this mandate violates the personal freedoms of many Oklahomans. It potentially sacrifices their personal beliefs in order to not lose their jobs. And that, by the way, was the governor, Stitt. He said that as part of when he was writing to the Department of Defense. He said, I'm writing to the Department of Defense immediately to consider suspending the vaccine requirement for National Guardsmen in Oklahoma. He said, all of our National Guardsmen take their calling very seriously. These are patriotic citizens who are willing to put their lives on the line to protect others in our communities during the times of greatest need. So let's go to Idaho. Idaho is advancing several different bills that would compensate people for vaccine adverse reactions. One of them is House Bill 417. It was approved overwhelmingly in a 67-3 vote on Tuesday. It seeks to amend Idaho's code pertaining to workers' compensation to, quote, provide that vaccine-related accidents or injuries shall be compensable by employers or insurers. This is the key thing. Think about this. You put something out there. How do you control people? The money, right? Now we've got compensation, injury compensation, employers and insurance companies. They've got a lot of clout. You put the insurance companies on, and this is what I like about this. This is not, excuse me, this is not something that can be challenged or reviewed in the courts. I don't think this can be challenged or reviewed. This is simply saying, we're going to say that if you mandate somebody to do something, some medical procedure as a condition of employment, you are liable for that if they get hurt. They come to you for relief. Oh, this is very, very powerful. Very, very powerful because of the amount of money that is involved here. These people know how dangerous and toxic these injections are. There's no doubt about that. They're telling you all these happy stories in the media, but they know exactly what this stuff is. And if you put them on the hook financially for this poison that's being pushed by the FDA, and by big pharmaceutical companies and Fauci. If you put them on the hook for this stuff, they're going to be your allies to stop this mandate. They'll find some way. Here's what it says. When an employer requires an employee to receive a vaccination in the course of employment as a condition of hiring or continued employment, Any accident or injury caused by such vaccination shall be compensable. Now, it's not just that. They have a second clause, which makes it even more powerful. Listen to this. In any claim for compensation, where there is unrebutted prima facie evidence that the employee received a vaccine in the course of employment as a condition of hiring or continued employment, and where such employee suffers an accident or injury that may or may not be related to related to the employee's receipt of such a vaccine, it shall be presumed, in the absence of substantial evidence to the contrary, that such an accident or injury arose in the course of employment. You understand how powerful that is? This is saying, you know, you are guilty of harming this employee unless you can prove that you're innocent of doing it if you require a vaccine. That is huge. That is huge. The presumption is going to be that they suffer an injury as a consequence. If they suffer an injury, you require them to do this and they have something that looks like it, we're going to assume that's what it is. And the burden of proof is on you to show that's not what injured them. That is very powerful. And put the insurance, the big insurance companies now on the hook for this. The bill specifies that its provisions, quote, shall be construed in light of the most favorable to an employee with respect to a claim for compensation for any injury caused by vaccination received in the course of employment, or as a condition of hiring, or as continuing employment. You have to make them defend this liability immunity. That's very powerful. If the employer is telling you you have to do this in order to work here, if they're doing that, then I think our system ought to provide fair compensation. And this is a Democrat who's saying that. It's one of the reasons why this bill passed 67-3. I mean, how can you come out against that? This is a very, very powerful tactic and technique. It needs to be done by all the state legislators. You know, we've got 25, 26, 27 Republican attorney generals, attorneys general throughout the country. And I don't know how many legislatures are in control. We've got about that same number of governors and so forth. They need to, each and every one of them, do this. This is something that the Democrats are going to have a hard time explaining away. You know, put them on defensive. Just do it for partisan reasons. Come on, you want to stay elected in office? Just do this for us, okay? Just put it out there. Your naked self-interest, you know, you corrupt SOBs. If you have no principles, just do this to make yourself look good, at the very least. And why doesn't anybody in Congress do that? You know, we got the good guys, we're told. You know, we got Ted Cruz and we got Rand Paul and Mike Lee and yada, yada. Why aren't any of them doing this? Oh, they're too busy feathering their nest and playing partisan political games. That's what they're busy doing. Bill opponents argue that what we've had here has worked well for decades. Well, this ain't what we've been doing for decades, is it? That's not an argument that's going to hold any water. This is unlike anything we've ever seen in this country or anywhere else worldwide. Another bill, H 412, this is also in Idaho. It passed 48-22. It calls for existing law to prohibit certain discrimination based upon immunization status. Now, that wasn't as popular because there's a lot of Democrats who want discrimination. They want segregation. And so they would make it, this bill would make it unlawful to refuse to withhold from or to deny a person any local or state government services, goods, facilities, advantages, privileges, et cetera, based on the person's immunization status or whether they have a immunity passport. In addition to that, Idaho lawmakers have also passed another bill, H 415, which would add medical, religious, philosophical, and natural immunity exemptions for employees from vaccine requirements by employers. That bill applies to all employee-required vaccinations, not just against COVID. Also, the Idaho Senate, on a voice vote, approved a declaration stating opposition to President Biden's executive orders of September the 9th. Attorney General Rokita said, no pandemic gives President Biden the authority to ignore the Constitution and the rule of law. And my office will use every means at our disposal to protect our liberties from the president's gross executive overreach. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back, and we'll talk about some questions that people have had in terms of what to do, because deadlines are coming up for a lot of people in these other categories. You know, the 100 the private companies with 100 or more employees, that's kind of been put on hold now, and there's a lot of momentum on our side. We got control of that ping pong ball right now. We'll see what happens with that. But it's still a very grave situation for federal employees and contractors. We'll talk more about that when we come back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Looking for better information? APSRadioNews.com features articles and commentary, along with audio from all the top news from around the world. APSRadioNews.com.
Before I get back into the mandates, let me just say this to those of you who are listeners, because I have most of my audience is on podcast. And so we, until about a month or so ago, we had not really looked at trying to monetize that. I kind of figured that that would get me kicked off, put me under scrutiny. But we decided, well, let's just go for it and see what happens. And so we have two different podcasts. We have The Real David Knight Show, and that's the bigger one because for the first, up until March sometime, we couldn't use the one that I've been using for several years, The Real David Knight Show. That was tied up with InfoWars, and they would not cut that loose for me. Finally got somebody on the inside to cut that loose for me before he left in March. But for the first couple of 3 months or so, we had to create another one, and we called it The Real David Knight Show. And we put that on Podbean. And then we got control of the other one, and it was on Spreaker. So now we've got two flavors of the show that are going out, and you can go to those particular sites. You can go to Podbean or you can go to Spreaker. We pay to for that service at Podbean and at Spreaker. So we can upload, and they give you a certain amount of data and so forth, storage. There's no limit or charge based on people downloading it, but there is a charge for the storage amount that you have there. That's the way they work. And so we pay for that service. And then you can go to Podbean. They have an app, and you can use their app to play the podcast, or you can download it directly from Podbean or from Spreaker. And at the same time, those two hosting sites also push it out to all the different podcast sources, so to iTunes and to Google and to all these different places. Spotify was one of them, but Spotify has banned me now. They paid Joe Rogan $25 million, but they banned me. They're the worst one. They're the only place that has banned me so far. Even Apple has not banned me, so I shouldn't draw this to their attention, but they haven't. And so And they didn't back in 1986 when everybody banned InfoWars. I was the only one that didn't get banned from these podcasts, except by Spotify. And then when I started the Real David Knight Show, they let that go for a couple of months, and then they banned me at Spotify again with that. So you have the two different shows that you'll see at all of the different podcast places, or you can go to Spreaker, or you can go to Podbean to play it. Now, when we monetized it, Spreaker monetizes all of the, if you listen to the show or you download it or whatever from iTunes, they count that as a listen. And so we went to them and they put in some ads at random places. That's another issue that we'll have to address. And I know that that interrupts me sometimes in the middle of a sentence, but, you know, it does help a little bit at this point. It's not a big revenue stream, but that gets attached. That they put that in their file, and then the file goes out from there. So if you listen to it, if you stream it or download it from them, or if you stream it or download it to other places that they push it out, that Spreaker thing, that's all of the different downloads. Podbean was actually bigger. We got a lot more listens, people who go there, because that's where we were exclusively for the first 3 months of this program. But they only monetize what people listen to on the app. And that's less than 10% of the pod things out there. And it seems to have caused problems. And there's not a whole lot of money involved in it anyway. I mean, we've had it there for a month, and we've made $50 off of it. And so I started having people tell me that they're having problems with Podbean. Podbean seems to be skipping in places and missing content. This writer says, strange things are occurring using Podbean. I have an Android device. I heard content skipping around, backstepping to previous time code, even different days at some point. Frequently, I'll also hear David's content blocks repeated several times to where I need to check my place and skip forward again. And he mentions a specific one. He says, going to Rumble or to any other platform, it seems fine. Yeah, the problem is not in the file. And, you know, we upload the full show as a video format as well as audio to four different video platforms, to BitChute, to YouTube, to Rumble, and to Odyssey, then banned, of course, by YouTube. So we are up in those places, and you can see it's the same file that we put everywhere, same file that we sent to Spreaker, and they don't have that problem. Another person said, thanks for announcing that people have had issues with podcasts suddenly stopping on Podbean. It doesn't happen during ads, but while you're speaking, at least in my case. Said the workaround I found is to simply download the episode, and then it works okay. It only takes a few moments on Wi-Fi, and then the episode plays without a hitch. And so I've had several people who have written me about that. So here's what we've done. Since it's ludicrous, the amount of, we're making like a dollar a day off of this stuff. So I just shut that off on Podbean. So you won't have a problem with that, and you won't see any ads. And hopefully, let me know. The reason I'm mentioning this is please let me know. I think that's what it is, because we'd never had these problems until we started doing that. And then once we started doing that, that's when it happened. And the way they sell ads is different as well. So they put it out in a marketplace, and I think even though it'd been up there, you know, for about a month, it's really only been about the last couple of weeks that we've actually had somebody who was kind enough to sponsor it there. And so that's when these problems started, was when the ads started getting served there. So we've stopped it on Podbean, and that's the real David Knight Show that you'll see everywhere else. Now, if you would like to help us in terms of something that is just a little bit of an inconvenience to you, if you want to listen to it, the David Knight Show, or to go to Spreaker, or just to look at the David Knight Show on iTunes or other places, that helps us because they have put some ads in there. So the way they do the ads is completely different. They put them in. The people don't necessarily sign up to advertise there. I don't know who the sponsors are. I've had some interesting emails from people talking about some interesting sponsors I've had there, but I'm happy to have them pay for the program, even if they don't want me on their platform. So well, it's a strange situation, is it, when we start censoring things, we wind up in the Soviet society. Anyway, that does help if you want to suffer through those, and we'll try to make that so it doesn't interrupt in the middle of a statement. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what is happening with these letters for exemptions. And again, they're not paying much attention to medical exemptions, so we focused on religious exemptions. A very strong case for that. If we were living in a society where the rule of law made any difference, because we have multiple laws that prohibit in many different ways discrimination against people for religious beliefs. So the religious exemption is something that is clearly the law is on your side. But again, we're living in a lawless society. I have so many people who have, because this deadline is coming up, so many people have written and asked for a letter. And we've got a couple of different letters that we have, but the one that I think that people have used more than any other is one from a listener, Jason, who's in the military. And he said that it has been very touching for him to hear that this has been effective for other people, because he's in a situation, frankly, where it looks like they're not going to honor this for people in the military. You never know, but it looks like they're not going to be able to do it. But by putting that out there and by making that available to other people, God has used his letter to help a lot of other people. God works that way many times. And he has an update. He says, because he had also, even though he put out this letter, he also had contacted me about his grandson, and I'd put it out. He said, I asked you a while back to pray for my grandson, Jeremiah. The doctors suspected him of having a fused skull, and there were issues with his rib cage. He finally got to see a specialist yesterday, located several hours away. And what all the doctors had said was this is going to be a very, very dangerous operation. They immediately said it didn't look good and that he may need surgery. They also suspected that he might have scoliosis because of his rib cage placement. My wife called me immediately to let me know that they could not confirm this until they did x-rays and they got the results back. I prayed and asked God to hear the prayers of your family as well as your listeners, and we just got the results this afternoon, and it turns out nothing is wrong with him. He says, I truly believe this is a miracle because we could all see that something was not right, and the doctors could all see that as well. They want to defer him to another specialist for a second opinion because they frankly can't believe it. And so he just wanted to thank us and thank God for the prayers. And I would just say to people, as we go into this situation, for those of you whose sincere religious beliefs are being cast aside and despised and ignored as the law is being ignored, I just want to say to you, one of the best things that you could do would be to get the book by George Mueller. I've recommended this before, his autobiography. He was somebody who lived in the middle of the 1800s. At that point in time, there were tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of orphans just wandering the streets in the UK. It's one of the reasons why it was featured so much in the stories of Charles Dickens. It was a real problem. And and George Mueller decided that he would take a few of them in and help them, and all of a sudden it just started growing. And he had no money. He was dirt poor. He had no money. And he kept a diary about what happened, and it's truly amazing. So I would suggest to you this detailed diary of his, and as a matter of fact, you could get it abridged. You don't have to get the entire thing. Somebody went through, and he was very reluctant to give them permission, but they got some of the key things, because, I mean, he talks about every little issue and how God provided just in time for these orphans, and he got a massive organization. Eventually, it went over, it was a gigantic complex with many, many buildings, where he was taking care of these orphans, and even to the extent that Charles Dickens went there to take a tour at one point in time, and he, to Charles Dickens' surprise, didn't give him a sugar-coated tour. He just said to two kids with him, would you show him around and, you know, let him ask questions and you tell him whatever you see. I mean, it wasn't like he was trying to manipulate or control what he saw to make himself look good. So read that. I would suggest you read that. And I would also suggest for people a book that came out about a year or so ago, maybe 2 years now. Yeah, probably 2 years. Lee Strobel, you know, he was a reporter who looked at crime investigations and stuff. And so he did a book many years ago called The Case for Christ. His wife was a believer. He wasn't. He did another one more recently called The Case for Miracles. And when he talks about that, he says, you know, they have surveyed doctors, getting back to the situation with Jason's grandson. He said they've surveyed doctors and they found that doctors, more than anybody else, in terms of percentage of the population, believe in miracles because they've seen them. So just a couple of things to encourage you. Anyway, he goes on to say that he's in the military. He says, I've got a lot of members in the military, family members who are in the military, my entire family. He said, I share the links, try to get them on board. He said, but they're diehard Trump supporters. I know that's what keeps my audience from going, but I have to talk about it. It is an ongoing issue. I mean, we just had, was it this last weekend or the weekend before last down in San Antonio? We had Flynn, and I'm sure they like Flynn too, if they're in the military. I felt that Flynn was severely abused. I liked Flynn at the very beginning. Flynn during the campaign, during the 2016 campaign, was very frank about what was happening in Syria. Candid about what was happening and truthful about what was happening there. I agreed with that. They immediately moved against him. I thought the charges against him were absolute nonsense, and I still believe that. But then in the last couple of years, he has started to push, and he still is pushing as he did in San Antonio, still pushing. Everything is still about the election and the recount. And if you go to his fundraising site, everything there is about the election and about the recount. We need to move on from this. We need to pay attention to what happened last year, 612 days ago. Because, you know, this is the problem right now. And, of course, Trump is not going to save us from any of this stuff because he was there as part of that operation 612 days ago. So I see this discussion about the election. It's a good thing that people understand at least one of the many, many ways that elections are corrupted. And as I pointed out before, it's corrupted from the very beginning when they tell you who's going to be allowed on the ballot, who's going to be allowed in the debates, and then it gets worse after that. And so, yes, it was more corrupt than we've ever seen before. But at the same time, we need to understand that we've got to do something about this right now. And that Trump was there. And the most charitable explanation you can have is that he had 4 years and he failed. He failed to do anything that was right about this pandemic or about this vaccine. He did everything that Gates and Fauci wanted from this vaccine. And so the most charitable explanation is that he just simply failed. Let's try somebody else. You could say that it's a betrayal, and that's my opinion. But he failed, no doubt about it. This person has put through their religious exemption, this listener, and said she works at a small rural hospital in North Carolina for many years, has done that. They are looking at a December the 6th deadline to be fired. She says, I filed for religious exemption and have not been given a decision. And let me just say, don't give up on this, because I've also gotten a lot of letters from people who said, we filed this, and it took so long, I thought they were just going to throw it out. But to my surprise, they honored it. So they may honor that. So don't give up yet. Keep praying about that. She said, employees have been given a unique opportunity to schedule a meeting with the CEO to discuss concerns. So my question is, David, what do I say? I listen to you every day, and I wish I could say, go listen to David Knight. But she says, how can I verbally express everything I need to? I have so much to say, but I'll probably have less than 5 minutes to share. What should I include and what should I leave out? Well, let me just say this. I don't know everything that you can put in there in 5 minutes. But I'll say this. You're speaking to a CEO, so give him an executive summary and put it in writing so that you're not under pressure to try to remember all of your points. That way you don't have to sit there and try. Oh, and then there's this, you know, these are my concerns. And you make it concise and you number these different concerns. And so that would be my first thing beyond content. I would just say, give them an executive summary, make it short, give them, you know, numbered or, you know, a dash for the particular things to lay out what your concerns are. Beyond that, I would say, you know, you can hand that to him and he'll scan through that and then he can ask you some questions on it. And then it'll be a more natural thing. At that point, it'll be a dialogue and you're not having to make a speech to anybody. So I would say to him something along, if I was writing this, I would say, number one, I'm doing this to honor God. There's nothing that man can offer me. A satisfying career, the ability to support myself, my family, nothing is as important to me as that. And I will not compromise my beliefs. Second thing, we used to have a country and we used to have employers who valued integrity. Part of valuing integrity is giving people the freedom to choose what they want in terms of moral choices as well as medical choices. You may want to leave out the medical because they want to immediately throw the, oh, but we have experts over here. You don't have, as a patient, you don't have any say-so as to what's going to be put in your body. So you might want to leave out the medical thing. The next thing I would say, you know, I would say that religious liberty is the most important basis for the founding of America. And it means that I don't need anybody's approval. But I'll tell you, since I'm a Christian and I'm told to be ready to give an answer when people ask me for what I confidently expect, because I'm a Christian, I will give you an answer. I'm not legally bound to do this, but I'll go the extra step. And I will tell you that at that point, yeah, just do this, because if these people, I got to say to you, yeah, if these people are holding a gun to your head and forcing you to betray your religious beliefs, they need to hear the gospel. They've got a bigger problem than you do. You may be about to lose your job, but they're going to be standing before God one day who, you know, that's a different thing than going before the CEO over your job. And so I just give them the gospel, you know, just say, look, I'm not counted right before. I'm not doing this because I think I'm going to be justified before God for this. I, like every other person, have rebelled against God, and there isn't anything that I could do to make up for that. But God sent his son, and he paid that fine. He paid the fine. And not only that, but he adopted me in Christ. And so God looks at me, and he sees Christ. So I don't have to be self-righteous. I'm not doing this because of that. I'm doing this because that love that was shown to me, I'm not going to betray. That's why I'm doing this. And so you need to make that clear to him. And you need to say that because of that, and because of my love for my fellow human beings, I will not participate in something that is where they sacrifice the most innocent of humans to produce their obscene profits. And that's what this is. And so I would just make that clear to him. And I would say, perhaps you don't understand. You might want to get into some of the fact that this is altering your body. You think that is an abomination to God. You know, we've had my understanding of Genesis 6 was that was exactly the type of thing that was happening when God destroyed the world. I think that this transhumanism and using genetic therapy, which they've now admitted, the CEO of Pfizer, Bourla, has now admitted that. I think that is an abomination in the sight of God as well. We know, though, that murder is. That's clear. You might talk about how this is something that is being used directly to oppose Christians. And if it's opposing Christians, it's opposing Christ. And if it's opposing Christ, it's antichrist. So there's a lot of different things that you could say. But take it from the standpoint that this is a person who is really putting himself in a position where he is opposing people exercising their religious beliefs. And finally, I would just say government is prohibited from doing that. And because of that, government has also put in prohibitions from other individuals doing that. We have a lot of labor laws that prohibit employers from discriminating against us based on our religious beliefs. And I and others have a right and a duty to challenge that kind of illegal intimidation and being done under color of law. So just kind of put that out there as well. You know, because, you know, we try to be nice to people, but sometimes it's important for us to stand on the side of what is right. And sometimes that means that we don't just lay over and lay down because we want everybody to see us as nice. And we have a right and a duty to our fellow man. You want to talk about doing something to help other people? That's what this is about, you know, and that is saying we're going to challenge this to help our fellow man. The booster shot confusion in California. You know, you have California going against, and just talk about, when we talk about authority, right? Well, we've got a medical emergency. We've got medical experts, and they're telling us to do this, and they're telling us to do that. Well, Gavin Newsom isn't even paying attention to that. He's defying the medical advice from the CDC. He's defying medical advice from the FDA. He's defying medical advice from the WHO. Because he is a lawless rebel. He always has been a lawless rebel. As a matter of fact, Matt Truella, in his book on the doctrine of the lesser magistrate, uses Gavin Newsom, when he was mayor of San Francisco, as one of the best examples of a lawless rebel in a position of authority. Now, he was not a, he was the mayor. And in 2004, he decided that even though it was against the law in California to have homosexual marriage, that he was going to do it anyway. And he had people coming from all these different states for a couple of weeks. It was eventually shut down by Arnold Schwarzenegger. So we can't have you coming up with your own definition of marriage. Who do you think you are, the Supreme Court? Well, the Supreme Court will do it, you know, because they've lost every single referendum. They lost. We didn't have one state, not even California, with all the money from Apple Computer and Tim Cook, Tim Apple. Even there, they could not pass homosexual marriage. As I said, when they were going through this, you know, you had go back in throughout ancient history. This is not just a Christian thing. This is a family thing. And this goes through every civilization forever. Even going back to ancient Greece, where homosexuality was widely practiced and accepted, they didn't have homosexual marriage. And so everybody, including California, had shut that down. And so it was done first by a rebellious Gavin Newsom, who is now rebelling with the vaccination stuff, right? Because that's his nature. He is a law unto himself, and we're not obliged to pay any attention to him. So they're pushing out boosters for everybody and in ways that's not advised by the CDC and the FDA. Hasn't mandated the boosters yet, but give him time. He will. Vermont, of course, has the highest vaccination rate in the country. And we're seeing these types of headlines. This is coming from ABC News. You're seeing this everywhere. They're looking at this by one state, or, you know, comparing the states that have the highest vaccination rates. Well, they also have the highest surge. You look at the different countries, the nation states that have the highest vaccination rate. They're having the biggest surges. It's almost like there's a direct correlation to this, isn't there? And again, correlation doesn't prove causation, but you want to investigate this, don't you think? At the very least, what this says is that the vaccines aren't working. It could say the vaccines are the cause of the surge, but it needs to be investigated. But they won't do the investigation, will they? Fully vaccinated. Here's another one. The Ottawa Senators. And I don't know what this is. Hockey? I don't know what this is. Maybe it's, since it's hockey. Since it's Canada, I'm assuming it's hockey. Ice hockey. The Ottawa Senators have a 100% vaccination rate, but 40% of the team has tested positive for COVID. Yeah, there you go. But meanwhile, even the WHO director, Tedros, this guy is, by the way, he was a very corrupt politician, a Marxist, no question about it. But even he is saying that he doesn't want to push passports for shots that, quote, do not prevent COVID. This is a story from LifeSite. He has said, he actually told the Brazilian president, Bolsonaro, that the WHO is, quote, not recommending, unquote, vaccine passports or lockdowns, he said, for now, because the vaccines do not prevent COVID. That's what he said. They do not prevent it. So I guess for now, you know. And Gates wants a new drug. You know, I guess we should play the Huey Lewis thing if we could do it without copyright infringement. I want a new drug, you know, one that won't make me sick, one that won't make me quit because I won't take it. Yeah, they want to restart. The reason that you see this being done by Gates and these other people casting aspersions on the vaccines is because they want a new drug. They want a new drug that they can reset the patent. They want a new drug that they can force their, okay, now this is new, now everybody take this one. Oh, that didn't work? Okay, let's do another one and everybody take that drug. That's the business model now. Germany is set to impose lockdowns on its unvaccinated people because it's just in their nature, right? Yeah, just in their nature. Natürlich. Yeah. 58% of British residents support the imposition of lockdown restrictions on the unvaccinated. See how they've created this hatred of people out there. Five Italian governors wish to follow Austria's lead in locking down the unvaccinated. Well, that's not a surprise either. You know, just as it's in the nature of the Germans to be authoritarian like that, so is this kind of fascism in the nature of the Italian government. You know, fascista. That was a Roman stick that was a bundle of sticks, essentially. And it was the symbol of power, of ruling. And so that term actually comes from, you know, we had Mussolini as well as Hitler. So there is a strong fascist move in both of these states, and they're wanting to follow Austria's lead in terms of locking down the unvaccinated. But just take a look at what happened at The View. This is what this looks like on an individual basis as you have a reporter articulately trying to explain to these people on The View why she will not get a vaccine.
Okay, Jed. So let's discuss. Yeah. Let's address the elephant in the room because you were supposed to join. You were supposed to join us in the studios weeks ago, but you couldn't because ABC has a very strict policy. You can't get into this building unless you're fully vaccinated. Everybody in this room knows that and is vaccinated. But you made a conscious decision not to get the vaccine. Now the CDC says a person is 10 times less likely to be hospitalized from COVID and 11 times less likely to die if they've gotten the vaccine. Okay, so why didn't you get it?
Yeah, so my story is a little bit unique. I'll share that first before I get into those CDC numbers. But
remember, we have only a certain amount of time, Jed, if you want to get everything in.
I have, so I want to let people know why I'm not there. I have a medical exemption to the vaccine that's been written by my infectious disease vaccinated specialist in New York City that's been co-signed by three other doctors. I'm not a candidate for this vaccine. I also have sky-high, multi-tiered, multifaceted natural immunity, very, very high, that has also been proven. It has been shown and it is substantiated by letters from these doctors. So for me personally, this vaccine poses a greater risk than a benefit. I'm also not a risk to any of you. I know there's been a lot of debate about that, but I have these doctors who've gone on record with that as well. So my point about all of this is that I am not anti-vax. What I really want is for people to make these decisions for themselves. I want every one of you to sit with your family members, to sit with your trusted doctors, and to say, what is the best decision for me? However, I do oppose mandates. I oppose them on the fact that, let's look at the science. This is a vaccine that was created to prevent severity of disease and to prevent hospitalizations. Now, we can have a whole debate on that in itself, but the vaccine does not prevent you from getting COVID and does not prevent you from transmitting COVID.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
we have seen that. That's not so. Come on. No, you've been at Fox TV.
Yeah, it is so. Listen to your CDC, Walensky.
Listen to me. You can listen to the director of the CDC. You can look at the CDC's website. That is why masks were reinstated for people who were vaccinated, because they said, and they admitted, they came out and said, this Delta variant, transmission is going to be a thing for vaccinated and unvaccinated people. So I'm not opposed to the vaccine, I am opposed to the mandate
762,000 people have died from COVID, including Manny's in-laws. And we've been friends a long time, but Manny's parents, I just don't understand
why
you choose to prioritize your personal freedom over health and safety of others. And don't think that we
prioritize your health and over the people.
We've had the United States Surgeon General debunk.
Yes, I heard what he said.
Everything that you've just said, and I just don't think allow this kind of misinformation
on
our air. I'm really sorry, my friend.
The other one is the one who's lying.
First of all, I would say to you,
she's
as a
lying.
Friend, what I just said to you is, I am prioritizing my health, and people talk about the common
over
good.
Over the health and safety of other people.
You're not going to have a common good if you're not prioritizing your own health. You
over
have
the
Surgeon
health and
General.
This should sound very familiar to you, Jed. This should sound very familiar to you. We got to go to break. And so I have to say.
Yeah, we got to go to break because we got some pharmaceutical commercials coming up here, you know? There you go. Let's go to break. Nothing to see here. We know who's paying their bill. She says, you've been at Fox News too long. Well, you know, as I pointed out yesterday in RFK Jr.'s book, he said he had a conversation with Roger Ailes, and he said, I will fire anybody who lets you talk about vaccine safety. You think they've had that little talk there at The View? Do you think their corporate sponsors have told them that? Do you think they know that? And Roger Ailes said, 70% of our income, when it's not a presidential election, 70% of our income comes from big pharmaceutical companies. What do you think ABC, I guess, that has The View? I don't know who. I don't watch that. Maybe they're higher than 70%. You know, Fox. Oh, they're going to let you. No, the reason she said that about Fox is because Tucker Carlson is so big that he can say what he believes. That's not the case with the rest of these people. So the CDC has gone on record. I've played for you many times the clips from Malinsky saying, well, unfortunately, it doesn't do anything about transmission, but it's going to keep you from dying, so you should get it. Well, then it's a personal decision about that risk then, isn't it? We've had the same thing from The Lancet, the UK medical publication of record there. Gates has even said it, and he owns the WHO. So what you heard there from Sonny Hostin was just a flat-out lie, that was there. But one town that has declared itself a constitutional republic in California. The town of Oroville, California, has declared itself a constitutional republic following a year of restrictive coronavirus lockdowns and mandates in the state. The bold move comes after Governor Newsom issued an executive order that will extend parts of his March the 4th emergency proclamation powers until March of 2022. They just keep extending it, right?
The revolution will
That's
not
right.
go
matter what you're telling everybody.
Everybody to get from street. Emergency. Everybody to get from street.
Yeah, and to get from a legal standpoint as well. You know, it's not an emergency if they're doing this type of thing. And I actually had somebody send me this from West Memphis, Arkansas. So this is being done by the Tourist Commission. They're using tax money from businesses. It'll be $20,000 that they're going to hand out. If you get a shot, you can win this. Does this look like an emergency? Do you bribe people over an emergency? And this listener says, I spoke to the director. He didn't seem to care. So I told him I'd be looking into legal action. I emailed the state attorney general's office. I'm not expecting much, but I don't think that this is legal. Well, it certainly is not what we should be doing if they really believe that this is an emergency, right? But they don't. But they keep doing this. And this is what the town of Oroville, California said. They said, with all these emergencies, and leaders declaring emergencies, it puts one person in charge. And they can do pretty much whatever they want, even when the emergency is no longer an immediate threat. They are reluctant to give up that power. You know, that's the thing. We always knew this. You know, that was one of the things that really bothered me so much all last year. Think about FEMA. You know, we always heard FEMA camps. That was one of the oldest conspiracy theories, except it's not really a conspiracy theory. It's happening now. It's being predicated. I mean, they're building the camps in Australia. They're doing news reports about, oh, this is great. Look, we have places where we can put people and hold them. And they're still pretending it's an emergency. Always, we knew that this was going to run out. This type of takeover was going to be done. They were going to declare some kind of an emergency, especially a bio emergency. We always knew this. So I got a question. Why would you tell people then that this is 4D chess? Why would you tell people that's not what this is because of Trump? Why would you do that, Alex? I mean, it's just absolutely, you know better. You've talked for years about FEMA camps and about how a federal emergency was going to be used to lock people down and lock people up. And that's where we're going to be if we don't push this back. And I'm glad to see that people are starting to stand up, that they are starting to push back on this. But, you know, when you tell people, when you go against what you've told people for decades in order to protect a politician, that's why so many people think you're controlled. Maybe you are, just like Glenn Beck. I want to show you what's going on in Melbourne, Australia. Take a look at this. This is a drone shot of people in that area where they have been pushing back, and it is not a minute too soon because, again, they're putting together the camps there and in New South Wales.
The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Look at that. Look at that massive number of people that's there. That's right. The revolution will not be televised. They will not tell you about the revolution on The View. And they won't tell you about the revolution on their news shows.
You will not be able to stay home, brother.
That's right. It will not be televised because they've got other people who are going to be sponsoring them, like Pfizer. So going back to this small California town, they said, we stand by and we believe in our Constitution, our republic. We believe that many times others in state and federal government are exceeding their authority across the board in everything that we do. Mandates eliminate personal right of choice to get vaccinated or not, or to vaccinate your kids or not. And it is a violation of basic constitutional choice. And so the vice mayor there, told a TV station, I don't know if they'll televise this or not, but he said, we're not talking about one mandate that's been pushed on us. It is a barrage of mandates. I think, he said a municipality, one of them said, I'm sorry, I'm trying to find another quote from, these are other quotes though, from, there was another quote I had from him. These are some quotes that were put in by the mainstream media reporting this, pushing back on him. So KOVR, the TV station that does not want to televise the revolution, they got some people to push back. And so this person said, I think we all believe in applying the law and agree in following the law, and this is just ridiculous. Another person said, a municipality cannot unilaterally declare itself not subject to the laws of the state of California. But that's exactly not what is happening. And WND, which had this story, was also a story from The Guardian. WND said, yeah, he's right. But just so you don't forget, the mandates that Newsom keeps issuing are not laws. They are mandates. They are orders. They are dictates. And he's acting as a dictator. What this town is doing, says WND, is opting out of things that are not laws. The town is choosing to not follow executive orders. As a matter of fact, the town is choosing to follow the higher law. They're choosing to follow the higher principle. They're not the rebels. Newsom is the rebel. So these things are not laws. They're emergency-based dictates. In Los Angeles, for example, the sheriff, and I've played these clips many times, Sheriff Alex Villanueva, said that he would not, that he would refuse to enforce the vaccine mandate. He said, if I don't, I'm going to lose up to 10% of my workforce. So it's just, it's not just that town that is pushing back. And again, he is acting as within the doctrine of the lesser magistrate, as a sheriff there, to not enforce this. So here's the quote that I was looking for from the vice mayor. He said, I proposed this after we've had 18 months of increasingly intrusive executive mandates and what I felt to be excessive overreach by our government. After the failed recall in California, our state governor seems to be on a rampage and the mandates are getting more intrusive. Now he's going after our kids and our schools. I said that's exactly what's going to happen. I said, California's got an opportunity to get rid of this guy. And you had the candidates, especially the one who emerged as the front-running opposition to him, Larry Elder, made it about the mandates. So I said, this is a referendum on whether or not they want to be slaves, whether they want to live under a permanent state of emergency and a dictatorial governor. And they went that way. And so as soon as that was over and he got that vote of confidence in his dictatorship, oh, he's really feeling the power now. So he goes on to say, this vice mayor, the American culture and the way of life is being challenged at its very core and perverted by radicalized politicians who have forgotten that as a republic, the power belongs to the people. Well, I agree with him 100%, except that they haven't forgotten that. They don't like that. And they're changing that. That's the purpose of this. Here's the power of knowing what your rights are. Now, this happened in the UK, reported by the Daily Bell. This is a guy named Frank. He lives in the UK, and he used the laws in the UK to get the airline to pay him $12,000 compensation for trying to force him to wear a mask. Don't get mad, get even. Don't get mad, get compensation. You know, the appropriate response to this is not to start calling them names and threatening them or even to get up and physically attack them, is what has happened with many of these customers who get very irate over the hall monitors that the flight attendants have become. Frank is from the UK. For the better part of the last 2 years, he's had to deal with mask mandates in public and when traveling. But Frank makes it a habit to read the actual rules. And he found that in the UK, there were exceptions to the mask mandate. One of the exceptions stated that you do not have to wear a face mask, quote, where putting on, wearing, or removing a face covering will cause you severe distress, unquote. Well, who's to say what constitutes severe distress? You might think a doctor would have, you'd have to get a note from your doctor saying that really stresses out my patient here. But Frank continued to read, and he found, quote, no person needs to seek advice or request a letter from a medical professional about their reason for not wearing a face covering. Some people may feel more comfortable showing an exemption card, but that's a personal choice and it's not necessary under law. Unquote. So, by the letter of the law, if wearing a mask causes Frank severe distress, all he had to do when asked to put on a mask was to say, I'm exempt. That's it. He doesn't have to show him a card. He doesn't have to get a note from his doctor or his mommy. Nothing. The only problem is that the people enforcing the rule never bothered to read it. They don't care about exemptions. You know, they're crossing guards. They're hall monitors out there. They've got power. I've got power, right? And predictably, the gate agent insisted that Frank was not exempt and they must put on a face covering. Despite being fully within his rights, Frank was not allowed to fly without a mask. And this is where two more laws from the UK, the Equality Act of 2010 and the Protection from Harassment Act of 1997, came in. Under the Equality Act, Frank's severe distress at being forced to wear a mask is a protected disability. And under the Harassment Act, a gate agent insisting multiple times that Frank wear a mask even though he is exempt constituted harassment. Armed with clear law on his side, Frank wrote up a detailed legal notice and he sent it to the airline explaining how his rights had been violated. And he made sure to stress the mental distress, the shame, and the anger that he honestly felt when challenged by the gate agent. After all, he was completely within his rights, but he was shamed and he was ridiculed in public. And because he knew the law better than the gate agent, there was no gray area here in the law. Frank did not need to lie or to exaggerate his claims. He counted up the violations of the law. He applied what he thought would be a reasonable fine for each, and he told the company he would sue them if they didn't pay him £100,000, which is about $136,000. He didn't expect them to settle for this high amount. It's a negotiating tactic. In the end, as the deadline to file the lawsuit approached, the company agreed to settle the complaint for the equivalent of $12,000. See, they want to keep this quiet. They don't want people to know what this is really about. And by the way, that's true of the FDA as well. I've got an amazing story about that coming up here in just a second. What the FDA is trying to cover up. Frank credits a website called You and Your Cash for teaching him this lesson. Well, it worked out for him, but we still have a long ways to go. Even though people are pushing back against this, just take a look at what happened in Western University. This is a student who is standing up for his rights, and now he's standing up to get handcuffed by the campus police as they take him off and arrest him. Unvaccinated, unmasked, and in class. Can you imagine? He's going to an engineering lecture. This is a guy who understands math and probability and statistics. And the rest of these kids there, you notice, don't say a thing. Nobody says a thing. And in the social media comments about that, that's what a lot of people were saying. They said, wow, you know, that's very different how obedient to authority this generation of kids has become. That wasn't what it was like when I was in school. They protested about anything and everything, even things that they were wrong about, they would protest. Question authority and so forth. These people just, they don't care. They don't care what the law is. And they don't care what their God-given human rights are either. Right, we have a generation that has just moved on from the founding principles of our country. And this is another incident last week. Another student handcuffed and removed. This one being carried out. arms and legs. Just amazing to see this. Now, in Florida, we have Ron DeSantis talking about using federal coronavirus funds to pay vaccine mandate fines. Now, I like this idea. You know, I've talked many times about how 612 days ago, declaring this to be a national state of emergency, that unleashed the vaults of freshly printed cash, although they don't bother to print it anymore. Let's just go with that metaphor. Although you can imagine, as you've seen pictures of Steve Mnuchin and his glamorous wife standing there holding these big sheets of $100 bills there at the Treasury. You can imagine that they're printing this stuff out and then just taking it out in a helicopter and dropping it all over the place, but especially in the laps of governors, Republican and Democrat. You know, Brad Little in Idaho, he got many times the entire state budget was given to him to spend at his personal discretion. We had the same thing happen with Greg Abbott. $300 million given to this little tiny shell corporation nobody had ever heard of to do contact tracing. He's made a big show about how he's going to protect the border. So, oh, I'll spend up to $250 million to protect the border. He spent $300 million on a company at the onset of this thing to start to track us. And when you look at the amount of money involved, I've talked many times about how California had something like a $12 billion deficit. And they wound up with a $75 billion surplus because of the money that Trump gave them through this releasing of funds. So Ron DeSantis is going to repurpose this and say, we're going to take that money. We got all this money that was given to us from the federal government. We're going to use it as a defense fund. So if the federal government is going to say, well, we're going to charge, you know, what was it, $13,362 or whatever the absurd amount. I had a listener who said, yeah, if you add up these digits, it comes to 18, which is 666. I don't know where they came up with this number, but it was really bizarre. And, you know, most people say, well, it's just under 14,000. And then they say that they can, if it's willful, they can take it up to just under 140,000. And that was also a really odd number, 136,700 and something, whatever, you know, down to like, you know, $32 or something. It's crazy. Anyway, if they want to fine people $14,000, $140,000, DeSantis has floated the idea of having Florida taxpayers offset the fines from a defense fund that they use from money that came from the federal government in the first place. Came from the Federal Reserve is really where it came from. And I think that's kind of appropriate. You know, if you go back and you look at this, at the very beginning of this, I went back And I found a lot of articles that went that came out around March, you know, when this happened, 612 days ago. And they said, here's what's in the pipeline for everybody. And then start out with what the state and local fiscal recovery fund was going to be. Just that one fund was going to provide $362 billion. That's a lot of money. I know we're talking about trillions of dollars now. But $362 billion is about half of what the defense budget is. And they're just going to throw that out for, well, I don't know, recovery. And then, of course, you had a lot of other things. You had Medicare accelerated and advanced payments. You had a FEMA disaster relief fund. You had a governor's emergency education relief fund, even more money given to governors. You had elementary and secondary school emergency relief fund. You had a higher education emergency relief fund, bail out the colleges. You had the Paycheck Protection Program. We talked about that a lot. Of course, most of that went to the big businesses, more than 50%. That was supposed to be for small companies, but more than 50% of that went to less than 5% of the companies who applied, and they changed the rules for calling yourself a small business. It was going to be any business that had fewer than 500 employees, and they changed it and said, well, that's fewer than 500 at a given location. Then they had the emergency injury disaster loans and loan advances, and all of this stuff is tens of billions of dollars or more. The restaurant revitalization fund, the shuttered venue operators grant, the economic impact payment, the unemployment compensation, the provider relief fund. That's HHS giving that to hospitals. That's $178 billion. The coronavirus relief fund. Wait a minute. I thought all this other stuff was coronavirus relief funds. Yeah. Rental assistance, homeowner assistance, on and on and on. Do you understand why this is going on forever? Because anybody and everybody who would stop this is being bought off. It was all about buying people off from the very beginning. Claiming a state of emergency to give yourself the authority to act as a dictator, and these other people, to act as dictators. That state of emergency let all the governors act as dictators. It let all the public health officials act as dictators. You have to understand what has happened to us if you're going to fix it. As I said before, James Carville said, with all the scandals of the Clinton administration, when he ran for re-election, he says, yeah, who cares? The economy's doing great. It's the economy, stupid. Let me tell you, our economy is not doing great. But if you want to get to the ultimate cause. Yeah, the economy, that may be the penultimate cause of the troubles of the Democrats electorally, if this happens. That's the symptom that everybody feels. That's the nail in their foot. But if you want to know what the ultimate cause of this economic problems, all the supply chain problems, everything, that goes back to the emergency. It's the emergency, stupid. That is the ultimate cause. The economy is just the penultimate problem. But the ultimate problem is the emergency. State-by-state breakdown of federal aid, and this is just for what the hospitals got per person. For example, Alabama, $158,000 per COVID case. In Alaska, $306,000. In Iowa, $235,000 per case. This is federal money. Oh, you come up with a case of COVID? All right, here's a case of money for you. Kansas, $291,000. Kentucky, $297,000. Do you get the idea? How much will each state get with the CARES Act, and on and on. And these things are anywhere from $1 to $15 billion. California getting the most out of the CARES Act. This is why they're keeping it going. This is why they're complicit in it. The New American reports that there is a new gubernatorial candidate in Nevada. He's running as a Republican, but he's always been a Democrat. He was the mayor of North Las Vegas. His name is John Lee. Former Democrat, he laments that his erstwhile party is now being run by Bernie Sanders, and he's aiming to usher in socialism. That is Bernie Sanders, not Lee. He said this reality, quote, is just sickening to everyone. He argued that the Republican governors can serve as the best check against the Democrat Party. He said, we cannot fix Washington from the top down anymore. We need to fix it from the bottom up. exactly right. He said, and he's been interviewed by Breitbart, he's been interviewed by Fox and Friends, because again, he's changing parties. He said, when you are a pro-life Democrat, when you are a pro-gun Democrat, and you're a very conservative person, that's not really well known in the Democrat Party anymore, he said. So for me to hang on as long as I did, hoping that the party would change, it didn't. It only got worse. And so now he's running as a Republican. He said he even voted for President Trump twice. So he's not perfect. Yeah, fool me once, okay, but fool me twice, no, I'm sorry, he failed. Actually, I think he betrayed us. Reuters is doing everything they can to try to defend Bill Gates. And again, it's what I played for, when I played The View for you earlier. You heard them say, well, that's absolute nonsense. They went crazy when she said, well, the CDC says that you transmit this vaccine the same whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated. It makes no difference for transmission. Oh, well, that's not true. That's not true. Well, Gates has said that as well. And when Gates said it, Reuters is doing everything they can to try to say that he didn't say it. Well, here's what he said, and I've played this for you before. I'm not going to play you the quote. I'll just read you what he said. He said, we didn't have vaccines that block transmission. We got vaccines that help you with your health, but they only slightly reduce transmission. So we need a new way of doing vaccines. Okay? So what they're saying is, oh, he didn't say that they don't, you know, they're good for transmission. They're trying to spin this way. Reuters reframed the argument. They said, quote, Gates did not say that COVID-19 vaccines are ineffective. You see how they spin this? This is Reuters. And as Zero Hedge points out, this is highly disingenuous. This is tweets that they put in were cited by Reuters, and they came from a Pfizer board member to try to reframe this. They said, you're missing the context here. Bill Gates' words have been taken out of context. He did not say that COVID-19 vaccines are not working very well. Rather, he said preparation for the next pandemic will likely include research on vaccines that stop virus transmission, something that they do not do now. Let me just say that they're not stopping people from getting sick, and they're not stopping people from transmitting it. Vaccines are not designed to do anything other than that. That's all they're designed to do. By definition, they're not working. Vaccines are designed to prevent you from getting sick. The whole idea is that you're going to expose people to a dead or weakened pathogen so their immune system can be trained before they come into contact with the actual thing. And so that's obviously not happening because people are getting sick and they're transmitting it as well. So they're not working. And you can try to spin that any way that you want. But what it does is it just shows us that Reuters is even more dishonest than Bill Gates, doesn't it? And what's even worse, as I pointed out before, and as I spent a lot of time a couple of days ago talking about this, 2 days ago, Dr. Peter McCullough was saying these things are a toxic pathogen themselves. They're pathogenic. They're a bioweapon because they're not. We're not injecting something into you that is harmless. We're not injecting a dead or weakened pathogen. We are reprogramming your body to produce a pathogen. And when does that stop? And as part of that reprogramming process, the cells are being destroyed. There you go. You can see that's the clip from 2 days ago where I put that up. Thanks for putting that up, Travis, at BitChute. Yeah, by the way, you know, we do put up the full show, as I talked about before, but we do put up excerpts topic by topic, on selected topics out of the show. Since it's 3 hours long, we put up shorter clips, and we do that on all of the video platforms. And you can find links to everything if you want to go to thedavidknightshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back with a little bit of headline news before we begin our interview with Sheriff David Hathaway. He's not a doctor. But he's a sheriff, and he's a good sheriff. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, and we've had, Travis told me that we've had several people who are watching the show live online asked to see the dog that took the show down yesterday. I tweeted it out because we had a lot of people say, are you guys okay? Is everything all right? Because it took us a while to figure out what had happened. We had a neighbor's dog, small puppy. It's been hanging around our house on a regular basis. And we didn't know it, but we've got a, where we're doing the show here, out here in the garage, we have a wire that runs out for our internet service. And just before the show, we realized we didn't have any internet service. As we started looking for it, we found that it was chewed in multiple places. So we get one thing fixed and we find another thing. And it was taking us so long. So finally, we just started to rebroadcast yesterday. And people were asking what was going on. And I gave a little bit of a background as to what happened. And I said, yes, it's true. The dog ate my show. Not my homework, but my show. And so a lot of people wanted to see the dog. This is what the, you got a picture of the dog, right, Travis? Yeah, this is what he looks like. He's a cute little dog. He's a mixture of a lot of different things and of unknown heritage. And so, yeah, he's a cute dog, but he's been very destructive, especially of the show. One of the things that I didn't get a chance to talk about yesterday was headline news, and I wanted to cover really what has happened with the Rittenhouse case. And of course, we've had a since yesterday, we've had an update to it, and it's now gotten to the point where the jury asked for the video footage. And at first, they didn't really supply any. They had a very, very grainy black and white version, and then they got wind of the fact that there was another better version of it. And so they got a better version of it, but it still wasn't very good. And it turns out they got a very high resolution video that shows much better what is happening. And it is exculpatory evidence. It is evidence that would show innocence. And so the jury is asking for this. And the judge says, well, this is just my worst nightmare, because it really kind of puts him in a position as the defense is saying, they withheld, intentionally withheld evidence that they were not supposed to withhold, and tampered with the evidence, frankly, you know, giving them much lower resolution versions of that. That in and of itself is grounds for a mistrial. The judge does not want to be the point guy in all of this. He's already getting death threats, and so are the jury. So, like you said, this is my worst nightmare. But I've covered so many of these politicized trials, and make no mistake about it, this is a politicized trial. Everybody is focused on it. You've got people saying, well, we're going to riot and burn things down if we don't get the verdict that we want out of it. So it's very politicized. And in these politicized trials that I've covered in the past, it's become a characteristic for our government to withhold exculpatory evidence. They did it in the case of Ross Ulbricht with Silk Road. They withheld the evidence that there were FBI agents that were being prosecuted in a separate trial for having taken over the site and embezzled nearly $1 million from it. And at the same time, they were saying that Ross Ulbricht was the only one who had any control of that. Meanwhile, you had a dishonest district attorney and a dishonest judge in that trial who said, as you had a district attorney somewhere else said, well, you know, there were murder-for-hire contracts that were put out there, and we think that that came from Ross. Well, it could have come from the FBI agents who had control of it, and they weren't the only ones who had control of that site. And Ross Ulbricht was never even indicted on those charges, let alone found guilty. And yet the sentencing judge sentenced him as if he had put out a contract to kill somebody. And he was not even indicted, let alone convicted, but used that as the basis for giving him three consecutive life sentences so that this young man is never eligible for parole. We've seen all kinds of, saw through the Bundy trials. And the thing that really blew that Bundy trial open was when you had a good guy at the BLM who exposed the data. And that made that judge, that was her worst nightmare, because she had already rigged the trial for the government, but there was nothing else that she could do. And so she had to dismiss it with prejudice, which meant not a retrial. So that's what's happening in the Rittenhouse case. I don't think there is a verdict on that yet. Everybody is watching to see what happens with it. We also had a development that I didn't get to yesterday. Kevin McCarthy, who is the Republican head in the Congress, is slamming the Department of Justice and Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, because it was proven that he was lying to Congress. But again, we've seen Clapper do this about surveillance of everybody in the United States, and nothing was ever done to him. But we find that Merrick Garland, an FBI whistleblower, showed that even though he testified on October the 21st that they were not treating parents who speak up at school board meetings, identifying them as domestic terrorists, which is what the National School Board Association wanted him to do, and to treat these people who were criticizing the curriculum that is sold by his son-in-law, conflict of interest there. But he said, no, we're not doing that. Well, this is an email from the day before showing that's exactly what they were doing. That email referenced his directive on October the 4th to the FBI to ramp up its involvement in school board threats and notified agents of a new tag, EDU officials, EDU officials, to assign to any threats against school administrators, board members, staff, or teachers to determine the scope of the problem on a national level and to provide, quote, a comprehensive analysis of the threat picture. So he just, not only is he turning the FBI into a politicized Gestapo, but he's also lying under oath. And that's been shown by an FBI whistleblower. As I said, when they released this, they said this disclosure provides specific evidence that federal law enforcement operationalized counterterrorism tools at the behest of a left-wing special interest group against concerned parents. And of course, it has a massive conflict of interest involved in it as well. Before we run out of time, I just want to do a little bit of something that gives us a chance to lighten up a little bit. This is something that you've just got to see it to believe it. This is Laura Ingraham. This has now gone viral. I saw this on Tuesday night. It's now gone viral. Maybe, though, you still haven't seen it. She is talking to somebody on her program, and the guy is kind of going over what's happening on various TV programs. And he starts by talking about Yellowstone, a Kevin Costner thing. I haven't seen it. And how this is a refreshing change from most of the stuff that people are seeing. And then he transitions into a Netflix program called You. That's the name of the program. And this is the way it's described, because I haven't seen this either. A popular thriller series focusing on a bookstore manager who meets an aspiring writer and becomes completely obsessed with her, doing anything and everything to get close to her. Now, that's what he referenced. So he's talking about Yellowstone, and then he jumps into talking about You. And hilarity ensues.
The politics and all those woke storylines in so many shows today. You know, I was watching an episode of You where measles came up.
Wait, when did I mention measles?
I don't know. It was on you.
What was on me? What are you talking about? Is Raymond even hearing what I'm saying? I never had the measles.
What's on you?
We never did a measles and vaccine episode. Is this a joke?
I know.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It was on you. It was on you.
I've never had, Raymond, I've never had measles. What are you talking about? This is stupid.
It was an episode of a show, Laura.
Well, what's it called?
You.
What is
you.
He talking about?
It's called you.
I've never done a show on measles. I just completely give up. We got to get
it's
out.
It's a show
I give up.
Called You on Netflix.
There's a show called Laura Ingram on Netflix. What are you
Never mind.
About?
I'm moving on to Adele. I can't explain this to
What's
you.
Okay.
Pop singer had an open.
That's it. And it's who's on first all over again, isn't it? As a matter of fact, this is a little bit of what who's on first looks like. The famous Abbott and Costello routine.
Players nowadays very peculiar names.
You know, a lot of funny names.
You know, like Stinky Nicknames. Fields.
Stinky Fields.
Goofy Dan.
Boopy Barber.
Booby Barber.
I know all of them.
Well, let's see. Now, we have on our team, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out, the guy's name. That's what I want to find out, the guy's name.
I'm telling you, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Now, Abby, you going to be the manager of the baseball team?
Yes.
You know the guy's names?
Well, I should.
Well, now, you tell me the guy's names on the baseball team.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
You ain't saying nothing to me yet. Go ahead and tell me.
I'm telling him.
You ain't said nothing yet. Go ahead and tell me.
Who's on first, what's on second, I don't know is on third.
You know the guy's names on the baseball team?
Yes.
Well, go ahead. Who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the guy's name.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who?
The guy playing first base.
Who?
The guy on first base.
Who is on first?
What are you asking me for? I don't know.
Now, wait a minute.
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's his name.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
That's it. That's his name.
Well, you ain't said nothing. I ain't asked you nothing.
You did.
You know the guy's name on first base?
Sure.
Well, tell me the guy's name on first base.
Who?
The guy playing first base.
Who is on first, Lou?
What are you asking me for?
Yeah. It's a good thing that Laura Ingram and this reporter didn't start talking about China, because then things would have gotten really confusing. She? Who is she? I don't know who she is. No, who was on first? Actually, he was on first. He was on there before she. You had H-U, who. So who was on first in China? And I'm totally confused, right? Just like Laura Ingram. It's a program called Laura Ingram on Netflix? What are you talking about? I don't know. I never had measles. And so we have AOC has to get involved, right? Occasional cortex. She has now confused natural gas for oil in a video explaining why pipelines are bad. AOC does not know the difference between oil and gas pipelines. She says, okay, this is for energy, you know, independence in the United States. We actually already produce enough power in our own country, whether you agree with that or not. I mean, do you disagree with the fact that we should be producing our own power? Yeah, no, of course we should be dependent on who or she or whoever is in charge in China, right? A lot of these pipelines, she said, are being built so that the U.S. can export and sell natural gas abroad. And, you know, people make geopolitical arguments as to why that should be the case. Well, they transport crude oil. And, you know, if you look at the big one, Keystone Pipeline, that was coming from Canada. And again, I didn't like the idea that a foreign corporation that was owning that pipeline could come in and condemn American property. That just didn't sit right with me. On the other hand, this is a much more efficient way if you can do it without stealing people's property. It's a much more efficient way and safer way to send the oil in. Safer than doing it by truck or by train. You can still have accidents, you can still have leaks, but it's much lower probability that that's going to happen. If you don't stack up hundreds of ships and make them wait for months on end to get to the port in California, it's not likely they're going to drop an anchor on an underwater pipeline. But the ones that were above ground were even easier to manage. There is nothing that is risk-free. So you just want to try to minimize the risk. So I thought that was a good idea. Plus, what she's saying here, we want to create these pipelines so we can sell natural gas abroad. Well, forget about the fact that she doesn't know the difference between natural gas and oil. But the reality is that they set up the pipeline for internal use. And what they were saying was, if you stop this pipeline because you don't like the oil that's coming in from Canada, and you don't want that shipped down to U.S. refiners, what will happen is they will put it on a ship and they'll send it to China. China will buy it. And so the pipeline is just the opposite of what AOC said. It means that if you don't have the pipeline, it will be sold abroad. If you do have the pipeline, it will be used domestically. Canada and the U.S. But some of these pipelines are totally within the United States as well. So it does just the opposite. And it also makes it a little bit riskier because now you're talking about an oil tanker, which is more likely to have an accident than a pipeline and harder to control once you do have an accident. But that's occasional cortex. As I was talking about the, before I move on, I do want to say that if you want to look at something that is truly ridiculous, but it's not funny, and that is the fact that we would have to have breathalyzers put into our cars, every new car. And that's part of what is called the infrastructure bill. You know, when we're looking at Biden's appointments, he has this person who is a legitimate Marxist-Leninist. She went to Stalin University. She was on Lenin scholarships and all this. And she wants to eradicate small banks. She wants all banking to be done by the Federal Reserve. She wants to centralize control of the economy. But she is a full-on Marxist commie. And yet any criticism of her and the idea that she wants to put us under a communist system, quite literally, and that's where she's grown up and where she's coming from and what she argues for and the names of her papers, as you point that out now, you have the mainstream left-wing media saying these guys are red baiting. It's not red baiting. She has always been there, and you got one of the GOP senators saying, I've never seen anybody suggested to be appointed to the head that is adamantly opposed to the purpose of the organization. You know, they want to put her in as the office of the comptroller of the currency. And she's completely opposed to the entire system. But of course, maybe that senator didn't notice David Chapman, who wanted to enact every kind of gun control when he was suggested as the guy who was going to head up the ATF by Biden. So it's yet another one of these examples, and I guess we could also point to Buttigieg, who is actually a dyed-in-the-wool Marxist. That's what he doesn't want to talk about. He wants to talk about his LGBT credentials, but he doesn't want to talk about his Marxist credentials. And he was known as Mayor Pete, but he was also known as Pothole Pete because he wouldn't fix the road. So this is the guy who's got more money to spend on infrastructure than anybody else, and guess what he's going to do? He's going to use it to tear up and to tear down infrastructure and to centrally control the infrastructure in the same way this Omarosa person has done it. But as also part of this infrastructure bill is the idea that everyone would have to pay for a breathalyzer. This is always something that was reserved as punishment for people who were repeat offenders of driving under the influence. And this article from the UK, Daily Mail, looking at this and said, as I pointed out the other day, they'll use breath sensors or maybe blood sensors because they also have a way you can press on a button and it'll look at the capillaries in your finger to decide what your blood alcohol content level is and then maybe not start your car up. They said it's one thing to think, as most of us do, that cars should include passive devices intended to protect drivers and passengers. Such as seatbelts and airbags. But this is something completely different. And this person says, I've never driven drunk in my life, yet I bristle at the thought of my car monitoring my actions and potentially overruling my judgment and decisions. And this is really what we're looking at. I pointed out the other day that my daughter's car was smashed up by a flying sheet of, first we thought it was sheetrock, and it turned out it was hardy plank. Smashed her window up, but also smashed up the front of her car quite a bit, and did a good deal of damage to it. And so they've got a rental car, and my wife Karen and my daughter, drove down to leave the car with a body shop that had a good price down in San Antonio. So it was a long drive. And in this rental car, this new Ford, they're driving down, and Karen says, all of a sudden this message comes up, and it's got like a cup of coffee there. And she's trying to figure out, what is it trying to tell me? It's got a cup of coffee. she's trying to drive as a distraction. But she said, it says, you've been driving for 3 hours. Don't you want to take a coffee break? This is a kind of surveillance system that is, you know, they're pushing into this. And there's an expense behind all this as well. This is why the average price of a car is now over $45,000. Because they're putting this kind of stuff in. That's bad from a lot of different standpoints. And this is all about making sure that we don't have private transportation anymore. Because they're going to make sure you can't afford the car. They're going to make sure you can't afford the fuel. They're going to be spying on everything that you do and second-guessing it. Well, I think we should let your insurance company know, if you don't pull over and have a cup of coffee, that you've been driving for too long, in my opinion. This kind of backseat driving nanny state surveillance system that is going to be everywhere in the automobiles, and you're going to pay dearly for it. And the purpose of it, again, is to make sure that you can't afford to rent, to own a car. You'll rent the car, and you'll rent the car by the ride, because you won't even be able to afford to get a lease. It'll be too expensive. And so that's what we're really looking at. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Sheriff David Hathaway. And we'll talk a little bit about what is happening in Arizona. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, and joining us now is Dr. I keep calling you a doctor. I've had so many doctors on, I'm sorry. Sheriff David Hathaway. And I've talked to Sheriff Hathaway several times in the past. He is in a very interesting situation. He's right at a border town, and he has had one interview after the other about the open borders, but he's got a very different take on it. I mean, he's talking about what it is the lockdown has done to our economy and what the lockdown has done to the economy there at the border, because they did have a very thriving economic back and forth, just people coming back and forth trading. That type of thing has been shut down, while illegal immigration has really gone through the roof. But I've talked to David about many things about economics as well. I found out about him through Lou Rockwell. He's had some interesting op-ed pieces there about economics. So he's not your usual sheriff. He's got a very broad background. Thank you for joining us, Sheriff Hathaway.
Yeah. Thank you very much, David, for having me on. And if I could say hi to some of my grandchildren that are listening in Florida, Lucas, Dorrit, and Becca, hi to you guys. A couple of grandchildren in Illinois. Hi to Adam and Fiona. So get that out of the way because I know they're tuned in. Thank you so much, David.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Great. Glad to have them on there. When I talk to you, you know, you understand really what is happening with this. And this is the ongoing, unending state of emergency that we're seeing everywhere. And you pointed out to me that you've got some people in Arizona that are trying to do something about that. And they've got a Republican governor there in Arizona who doesn't want to give up the reins of this power, just like we've seen a Republican governor in Idaho, Governor Brad Little. He shut down when the Republican legislature there said we're going to have a special session and stop this unending state of emergency, and that was in the summer of 2020. He said, no, you're not, and he shut them down. So what is the situation in Arizona? Is there a Republican legislature there, or is it just a Republican governor?
Republican-dominated legislature and a Republican governor. And, you know, there's kind of three things we can hit on. Time's not infinite, but this hypocrite Republican governor who speaks out of both sides of his mouth, he goes around, you know, touting the vaccines and how they're safe and effective and everybody should get vaccinated. But then he tries to play the other side, like where I'm opposed to vaccine mandates. And, you know, I think he's one of these ones that's probably planning on running for president in 2024. So, you know, he's trying to play all sides of the thing. But, you know, he's actually signed off on a bill that says that he opposes mask mandates and vaccine mandates. But one of the creepiest things he's done, his latest executive order, if you go to the governor of Arizona executive orders, is a thing called the Enhanced Surveillance Advisory. And you know, David, how usually they'll make these laws or edicts into euphemisms. They'll call them like the Puppy Dog and Rainbows Act, or, you know, the Patriot Act, something that's less than what it really is. But surprisingly, he put the creepy title on this thing, on his latest executive order, that's exactly what it is. It's called the Enhanced Surveillance Advisory. And it's funny, like when you take that federal money, he declared you could do the same countdown that you do every day, David, you know, 600 and some days. You could do that on this governor, too. Arizona held hostage because he did his COVID state of emergency last March under the Trump administration. He's continued it all the way to the present day. There's groups fighting back to try to get him to undo that. So why did he do that? Why did he do his state emergency declaration for COVID? Well, it's very simple. It's money. In order to get that CARES Act money, the American Rescue Plan money, all this COVID-related money, he had to have a parallel emergency declaration that matched the federal emergency declaration. If he did like Kirstie Noem did in South Dakota and didn't declare a COVID emergency, then, you know, he wouldn't be receiving those funds. You know, typically a governor can declare emergency for like a hurricane, you know, a volcano, an earthquake, a flood, you know, something, and then make his state eligible for low interest federal loans, or if there's some parallel federal money. But the strings attached on this are very simple. He has to share all the vaccine information, individualized data, with no ability to opt out for anybody who gets the shot in Arizona. And I'm going to read you some portions out of his latest executive order. Pursuant to the Enhanced Surveillance Advisory, Arizona Department of Health Services shall collaborate with the following: the CDC and the HHS, these are federal entities, Health and Human Services, by sharing the state's COVID-19 immunization and vaccine administration information with the CDC and HHS pursuant to and in accordance with its data use and sharing agreement. So he signed an MOU, a memorandum of understanding, that by receiving this federal COVID money, he has to share back all this individual information for anybody who gets the vaccine with no ability to opt out, and I'll get to that here. It has to be shared through the Immunization Gateway Project, which is run by a private company, private contractor called Health Current, that is the gateway to send the information to the feds. But check this out. This is what they have to share. This is right out of the governor's order. This isn't some conspiracy theory website. This is a Republican governor. This is his words, with his signature: pursuant to the Enhanced Surveillance Advisory, an individual, healthcare provider, or local health agency who administers COVID-19 vaccine shall report the following through a department required format to Arizona Department of Health Services every 24 hours. So this information must be reported every 24 hours to Arizona Department of Health Services, who then shares it all to CDC and HHS through the Immunization Gateway Project. So here's the things they must share. Once again, the following information must be shared every 24 hours by an individual, a healthcare provider, or a local health agency who administers COVID-19 vaccine. So anyone who administers a vaccine must share this according to this governor's executive order. A, the individual's name, comma, date of birth, comma, gender, comma, race slash ethnicity, comma, residential address, comma, phone number, and vaccine priority group. B, the vaccine product information, lot number, and expiration date. C, the route of administration and administration site on the patient's body. And D, the month, day, and year of each immunization. Now, people like me, we talk all the time about HIPAA and ADA, the American with Disabilities Act, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, that both have privacy provisions, confidentiality provisions, where patients don't have to share their information. They don't have to tell anybody about their medical decisions of whether they've been vaccinated or not. So Ducey is clever enough to put in here that you can't opt out. Let me read you this. Pursuant to the enhanced surveillance advisory status, Arizona Department of Health Service shall collaborate with healthcare providers and health plans to make all COVID-19 related data, included but not limited to COVID-19 immunization and vaccine administration, accessible through the statewide health information exchange for any purpose permitted by the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. So he uses the HIPAA language in there. So you think that he's complying with HIPAA. But right after that, it says, such information sharing may be permitted regardless of whether any individuals have opted out of having their individually identifiable health information accessible through the health information system pursuant to Arizona Revised Statutes 36-3803. Now, that statute is a medical privacy statute. I have that here in front of me, too. So it says, even if you've opted out using the state medical privacy statute, the information must still be shared. And I'm going to read you that statute. Title 36-3803, Arizona Revised Statutes. The title of that statute is Individual Right to Opt Out of Health Information Organizations. And it says, an individual has the right to opt out of having the individual's individually identifiable health information accessible through a health information organization by providing notice as explained in the health information organization's notice of health information practices. So anybody can opt out under state law, and HIPAA also protects that right. But once again, back to Ducey's latest executive order, requiring that all of this be shared every 24 hours with CDC and HHS, such information sharing may be permitted regardless of whether any individuals have opted out of having their individually identifiable health information accessible through the health information organization pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 36-3803, which is the privacy statute. And what I'm reading right here, you can see there's the, I just read that highlighted part. There's the governor's signature. There's his seal. This is his latest executive order saying that you cannot opt out of that. Now, that is the string attached to the federal money that goes along with his emergency declaration. You know, Christians talk about taking the mark of the beast, and some people say, oh, no, you know, you're wacko. How would they ever do that? How would they ever get everybody's information? You know how it says in the Bible, you won't be able to, you know, sell or trade or buy, sell, trade, you know, unless you take the mark of the beast. People think, well, you know, with this talk of going to a digital currency, how would they be able to track everybody's social credit or what you've done, or if you've done what the government has told you to do, if you've gone against your belief, and if you've injected yourself with these aborted fetal cells, these vaccines that are made or tested using aborted fetal cells. You know, if you go against your beliefs and you compromise your Christian principles to do these things, they think, well, you know, how would this mark of the beast work? How would they get the information? Here's a Republican governor, a hypocrite, requiring that every 24 hours, all this personally identifiable information with no ability to opt out be shared with CDC and HHS. And it even specifically puts the language in there saying that nobody can opt out. And remember the information we're talking about. We're talking about your name, date of birth, your residential address, and your phone number, amongst other things, must be shared every 24 hours with the CDC. So, you know, before I get too long-winded here, there is pushback against this, and I'd like to get into that, of people talking about the same things you, David, do, David, about why is this emergency declaration still ongoing from this Republican governor that pretends like he's against all this vaccine mandates and all this nonsense coming out of Washington. But I'd like to get into some of that. Let me
interject here and say, you know, when the CDC put together stuff and the front part of it was loaded in there with instructions to all these top-notch healthcare people who are going to be working at Walgreens that were going to be injecting everybody, right? They're going to be sent this stuff at super subarctic temperatures. They've got to thaw it out, use it within a certain period of time. You've got to dilute it in a certain way, you know, and so forth. And I looked at that, I thought, well, what could possibly go wrong with this? But at the back end of that order, and they put it out in August of 2020, talking about how they're going to grab all this information, report it to the CDC. Now it looks like they're reporting it also to HHS, and they're taking people's ability to opt out away from them as well. That's a key thing there. But the other thing I saw there, Sheriff Hathaway, was the fact that they were saying what really raised flags. They explained that away initially, saying, well, you know, we got to give you a reminder in 30 days because we don't want you to miss that second shot in 30 days, and we want to make sure that you get the same brand of vaccine because we really don't want to mix these things. Now they're telling everybody, eh, yeah, you take one of these, one of those, it doesn't matter, right? So that's all gone by the wayside. But the thing that really stuck out to me back in August of 2020 was the fact that they had another field down there that said refused. So it was like they were telling the health providers, I want to get all this information on everybody, and it's not just so that I can call them in 20 and 30 days to get a re-up of number two, but I want to know who refused as well. So this thing has stunk from the very beginning, but you're right. It's all about the money, and these people have simply sold us out and sold out the rule of law in this country for money.
Yeah, exactly, and Just to let you know, there are some brave people standing up to this stuff in Arizona. I myself, this surprised me. This started a few months ago. I started getting hundreds of affidavits and letters from people all over the state of Arizona. They were addressed to the governor and to all 15 sheriffs in Arizona. There's 15 counties in Arizona. Every sheriff was getting hundreds of letters, and we wondered, what's the source of this? They're from a bunch of individuals, signed, notarized, and I've got one of them here. If you're not listening on a podcast, you can see these things that I've been getting. Uh-huh. I think I've gotten about 1,000 of these. I know it's in the hundreds. I don't know exactly how many, but this is an organization that is one of the good things, you know, the silver lining of the cloud of what's happened the last year and a half. People are starting to get together and talk personally and just stop being keyboard warriors and just blowing a lot of hot air. They're actually getting together saying, what's going on? What are we going to do? So
good.
People have now sent these affidavits to the governor of Arizona. And you talk about the lesser magistrates, like you mentioned on the podcast yesterday. Mm-hmm. They sent it to the governor, to the sheriffs, knowing that if the governor is not going to undo this unconstitutional and illegal declaration of emergency that he's done, then who's going to do something about it? But let me just read some of this in here. And just to show the blatant illegality of what the governor has done, not just that we don't like it, you and me, David, but it's blatantly illegal.
That's right.
It's different in different states. In some states, the governor has the ability to act for 24 days or 28 days before the legislature acts. You know, he can act on a state of emergency. Here, it's 24 hours. And let me read you the pertinent parts. Mm. This is out of this affidavit that I've gotten hundreds of these from individuals. This is addressed to the governor and copies mailed to all the sheriffs by certified mail. You cannot create new power or authority through executive order. You cannot govern by decree without limitation. In this respect, you also failed Arizona Constitution Article 5, Section 4, and Arizona Revised Statutes Title 26, Section 303 that states, this is the part in the statute about the governor's ability to act on a state of emergency. It says, the powers granted the governor, this is in the statute, by this chapter with respect to a state of emergency or a state of war shall terminate if the legislature is not in session and the governor within 24 hours after the beginning of such state of emergency has not issued a call for immediate special session of the legislature for the purpose of legislating on subjects relating to such state of emergency. So, you know, there's a saying attributed to, I think it's John Adams, you know, we are a government of laws, not a government of men. Mm-hmm. So if a governor tries to bypass the legislative functions, you know, of Congress or a state legislature and just govern by decree, govern by fiat, this prevents that from happening. And I'm going to read this again. It's so important that he is supposed to convene a special session of the legislature within 24 hours so that they can make decisions. They can govern. They can decide. So he has 24 hours to act. So I'm going to read again. This is right out of the statute, the Arizona statute. The powers granted the governor by this chapter with respect to a state of emergency or a state of war shall terminate if the legislature is not in session and the governor within 24 hours after the beginning of such state of emergency has not issued a call for immediate special session of the legislature for the purpose of legislating on subjects relating to such state of emergency. So he can bring up the topic. I think this is a state of emergency. He has 24 hours, and then after that, the legislature can decide if it's a legitimate state of emergency, and they take all action, and then he carries out the laws that they pass.
And yet, here we are more than well over 600 days that this has been going, not 24 hours, but over 600 days. And there's a lot of states that have that type of thing in them, and then there's other legislatures that tried to get together and to put something like that in there to stop it if they didn't have that. And this has been shut down over and over again by these governors, many of them Republicans, simply because they've got the money and they've got the power, unlimited, both of those.
Yeah. And if we have time later on, I could get to another thing about how this money is being used in my community to hire people to knock on doors and see if people have been vaccinated. But if I could continue a little bit on this affidavit, it says, we the people, not having the power to make new laws or mandates, a prudent and logical approach would have been to call the legislature into special session to make decisions as a legislative body, which you failed to do. Not only is it prudent, it's required by statute.
Yeah.
And it says, we the people demand as our rights as the citizens of Arizona that the, quote, state of emergency, close quote, declared on March 11th, 2020, be immediately rescinded pursuant to Arizona Constitution Article 2, Section 8, right to privacy. No person shall be disturbed in his private affairs, and the state of emergency has violated Arizona residents on many fronts, from business shutdowns with financial loss to detrimental health and loss of life from postponed health care and isolated seniors in lockdown to a year of school missed by children across the state. And your continued effort to track and obtain personal information from all residents of Arizona is in direct violation of HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996, as further stated in Miranda versus Arizona, quote, where rights secured by the Constitution are violated, there can be no rule making a legislation which would abrogate them, close quote. So this is, mailed to all 15 sheriffs in Arizona and to the governor. And as a matter of fact, we had an online conference between all the sheriffs, and one of them brought up, like, hey, are you guys getting these affidavits? Where are these coming from? And I had researched it, and I had talked to the lady running this Arizona Stands Up organization is called Julie Wentz, and she would actually make an excellent guest for you to talk to.
Yeah.
She's a former healthcare worker that has just seen the injustice of this, never thought she would be a freedom crusader. And just this made her take a 180-degree turn in her life, and she's actually getting people together, telling them the importance. People don't know what we're talking about, David, that there's a state of emergency in Arizona that was declared for monetary purposes, and one of the strings attached is that everybody's information must be shared with the CDC and HHS. And it's right there on the governor's website, list of executive orders. You can read that executive order. So,
well, you know, there's a lot of people, Sheriff Hathaway, who are looking at this. People like Scott Gottlieb, who used to be the FDA commissioner, now he's at Pfizer, and he's gone on, Sunday talk show saying, we better pull this back because people are waking up about this kind of stuff. And you've got other people in Europe who are saying the same thing. They have gone so far. You've got a certain segment of these people. The really dangerous ones, I think, are the ones who say, well, it's out there, and they do it subtly, but they don't really get into the mandate aspect of it. I mean, Biden is dangerous because if we don't, and this whole approach to mandate everything and to force it down our throats, that is very dangerous if we don't stand up to it. But the benefit of that is that it's going to wake people up, just like you pointed out with Julie Wentz, you know, to wake up and to start paying attention and to see where this is all heading. And I think we're seeing a lot of that happening, and we're seeing this happening around the world. A lot of people are waking up. We don't need to have 100% of the people wake up. We need to have an activist group of about 10%. And I think we've got that and more of people who understand what's going on now. So that it's going to be a very dangerous time of opportunity for us, I think, is really where we are. It's a real crisis, isn't it?
Yeah. And if you talk to Julie Wentz, David, you'll find out that she's a very sincere, devout Christian, too. She's not just the freedom advocate. Every other thing is going to be quoting a Bible verse to you. She's a very principled Christian, and this is based on her Christian faith, the things that she is doing of trying to oppose this, of requiring everybody to take these, cannibalistic, these injections that have the aborted fetal cells used in the production and the testing. And just kind of talking quick here, because I got so much stuff we won't get to, but I would like to eventually get to these security bulletins. I'm holding this up to the camera if people are watching this on video. About, I get these bulletins from the chiefs of police and the sheriffs in the U.S. get what's called National Terrorism Advisory System bulletins. It comes from the Department of Homeland Security. But before I get to that, since we're talking about people knocking on doors and what this money results, Ducey takes all this money in so he can buy votes. So a lot of it comes in under the America Rescue Plan, and what that is supposed to be used for, this is from the Treasury website. Treasury Rescue Plan will deliver billions of dollars for eligible state, local, territorial, and tribal governments to respond to the COVID-19 emergency and bring back jobs. So how does this money get used in the local community, this America Rescue Plan money? And of course, everybody creates new positions and hires the employees because they don't have to raise property taxes. It's money from the Fed. So like, hey, yeah, you know, you can hire somebody in the community, give out more jobs, buy political points for the community. But here's one that just came out in my county. Just an example. It says grant funded position, three positions available, community health workers. So this is funded from federal grants, America Rescue Plan, that's given to the counties. And this community health worker, okay, what do they do? What are their duties and responsibilities? This is a job announcement that just came out in my county. Enters program-specific data into appropriate databases, client records, and program forms. So what's the data they're entering into the database? The same things we're talking about in the governor's executive order. Mm-hmm. What are some of their other duties? Performs home visits to identify clients. What do they mean by a client? Somebody where, we'll call you a client, a euphemism. You need to get the shot. Have you gotten the shot? Did you get your second dose? Performs home visits to identify clients and provide program-specific outreach services. Provides outreach services, information, and education to targeted populations. So who's the targeted population? Well, you got Governor Ducey's database that shows everybody who's gotten a shot, so you can go at all the addresses where they haven't gotten a shot and knock on the door and tell them the importance of getting the shot, because my position is funded by COVID money through the American Rescue Plan.
Wow.
It says provides outreach services through community presentations, distribution of flyers, support group meetings, and word of mouth promotion. What are the skills required? Well, you only need a GED or a high school diploma, but what are the skills required? You need to have this skill, persuading and influencing. That's listed right here. Skills
these
required.
These are door-to-door salesmen. I mean, yeah. We used to have door-to-door salesmen for Bibles and encyclopedias, but now we got them for the pharmaceutical industry paid for.
Yeah, it's like an ends meet, like a pyramid scheme. Yeah, it's like a pyramid scheme where you get those ads in like these little local things or on Craigslist. You know, are you satisfied? Can you make ends meet on $5,000 a week? You know, are you good at persuading and influencing? So it says persuading and influencing is one of the skills. Another one is creative writing. Creative writing is another one of the skills. Like, to me, that means fiction, you know, creative writing and persuading and influencing. But I didn't want to spend too much time on that. That's just a manifestation of how Ducey's money that he's getting because of his declaration of emergency, how it's used to create this group of door knockers in my community to harass people. And that would never fly as a local tax-funded program. You could never say, our county board of supervisors in this county could never say, we're going to raise taxes to hire people to go knock on your doors and harass you. But if it comes from federal money, then nobody's opposed to it. But
that's right. Yeah, and we've had the ad council that does all these federal advertising campaigns, things like Smokey the Bear and, you know, only you can prevent forest fires. They've never had more money than they did with this. They got $250 million for the ad council. This is why you're seeing a lot of ads, but they're also using it to shower money on influencers on social media. They're giving it to YouTube and to Google to push this type of stuff. So, I mean, it's just amazing, isn't it, Sheriff Hathaway, how pervasive this propaganda and this advertising has been for a product for which they have absolutely no liability or oversight. We paid as taxpayers for this product to be developed. We paid to have it sent out, and we're now paying for them to advertise it. And they have no responsibility for the harm that they do to anybody. It's amazing.
No responsibility. And the media outlets are totally controlled. As you pointed out, 70%, I think 70% of Fox News funding comes from the pharmaceutical industry. I think 45% of the FDA's funding comes from the pharmaceutical industry. If you have time, there's lots of things I could get to. I'm holding up to the screen for the people that are watching on video. A lot of people do this on podcasts. This is the seal of Department of Homeland Security. This is something that all the sheriffs and chiefs of police get in the United States. It's called the
National. You sent that to me, and I really wanted to talk about it, but I knew you were coming on, so I thought we'd wait and talk about it. This is really amazing. People, pay attention to this, and look at what their BOLO is. You know, be on the lookout for what? What are they looking out for, Sheriff?
Sheriffs get this, and I've been the sheriff since the beginning of this year, since January, and I've been sickened by these. And there was initially a lot of reference to January 6th in online forums and social media and grant programs to identify people. And there's this thing that they say, radicalization to violence. They always say that, like, we need to identify this kind of speech and then intervene before it turns into violence. It's amazing, but let me just read you some out of this National Terrorism Advisory Bulletin that sheriffs get. Today, Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas issued a National Terrorism Advisory Bulletin regarding the current heightened threat environment across the United States. Heightened threat environment. You know, what is there, an alien invasion? What are there, incoming Russian Soviet missiles with, you know, ICBMs with nuclear warheads on them? What is this heightened threat environment? Remember, this is this is domestic. This is not talking about a foreign threat. What is this heightened threat environment? And it's all about domestic. This National Terrorism Advisory Bulletin is only about domestic. That's all it's about. And this is what I get. So this is the heightened threat environment. It says, the United States continues to face a diverse and challenging threat environment as we approach several religious holidays and associated mass gatherings. The heightened threat environment is related to the fact that we are approaching several religious holidays and associated with mass gatherings that in the past have served as potential targets for acts of violence. So, you know, heaven forbid that you get together for Thanksgiving, you know, with your family, you know, and that you have
usually a terrorist event happens around that time, right?
Right.
Somebody exploding turkeys or something. I don't know.
Yeah, these bowl games, you know, where big football games and things like that, you know, or, you know, people get together for New Year's, you know, mm-hmm. Thanksgiving and whatnot, that is being described. Basically, the nuclear family and anything that private society does is the big threat. And this thing gets worse when they say the things you need to be looking out for. But they love these little acronyms. They say, through the remainder of 2021 and into 2022, domestic violent extremist, DVEs. You ever notice they give an acronym or initials to something that's really heinous? The same thing the pharmaceutical companies do on these ads. They give it a little three-letter nickname, and that makes it more ominous. So through the remainder of 2021 and into 2022, domestic violent extremist, parentheses, DVEs, including racially or ethnically motivated violent extremist and anti-authority, anti-authority slash anti-government violent extremists will continue to pose a significant threat to our homeland. Of note, DVEs exploit online forums. They exploit online forums to influence and spread violent extremist narratives. The ongoing global pandemic continues to exacerbate these threats. So what are the topics that they're talking about? The pandemic, the authoritarian response to the pandemic on social media, on online forums. That's the source of this threat, is anybody who's anti-authority, it says that right here, and anti-government.
And these, anti-expert. I imagine they're anti-expert too.
Yeah, and they exploit the global pandemic. Here's another thing they exploit. The recent events in Afghanistan, it says they exploit recent events in Afghanistan. So, as you know, David, anytime there's an ongoing ridiculous war like Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, there's always an embargo on bloody imagery and carnage and body parts being blown to pieces because they don't want people to be affected by that. You know, you might be sensitized and you might develop war fatigue, but...
Oh, just look at what they did to Julian Assange when they had that leaked footage. They called it collateral murder, you know, where they had video footage of these guys deliberately killing a newsman. You could see that he had a camera. You could see what they were looking at, shooting it up. And then when the ambulance got there, they shot the ambulance up and they're laughing about it. They don't want you to see that kind of stuff. They don't even want and they don't want you to see the violence that happens to our own troops that are there either. They don't want you to see any of that. They want to sanitize it.
So they allowed you to see a glimpse of that carnage when the U.S. pulled out of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. So they have to say that's another thing you might exploit, these domestic violent extremists that are anti-authority. They might exploit the recent events in Afghanistan and the religious mass gatherings and the global pandemic. So in other words, you were allowed to see some carnage when Raytheon started losing some money. You know, these big military contractors started losing money because the paychecks might stop once we stop that 20-year war in Afghanistan. So you were allowed to see some carnage, you know, so the violence of war, you know, where it wasn't just this pretty thing, this wonderful thing that we're doing the Lord's work and nobody ever gets to see the actual reality of what's going on. So that's another thing that they noticed. Well, people might complain about what's going on in Afghanistan. But let me get to the worst parts here. It says the public needs to stay vigilant and report suspicious activity to law enforcement. Check this out. Department of Homeland Security is also engaging industry partners to help identify and respond to the spread of disinformation, conspiracy theories, and false narratives on social media and other online platforms. That's right here in this Homeland Security bulletin to all the sheriffs, that DHS is engaging with industry partners, that means Facebook, Twitter, Google, to help identify and respond to the spread of disinformation, conspiracy theories, and false narratives on social media and other online platforms. So what's misinformation? That's just anything that's opposing you know, the authoritarian regime trying to shut you down and take your life away. If you just complain about the way the government's handling coronavirus, or you complain about how the government's handling anything else, you know, and you say, oh, this pandemic is a scam or global warming is a scam. If you say something like that, they want their industry partners to.
And this is a very old tactic. I mean, we've seen this in East Germany. What the Stasi did was, you know, tell us if somebody's complaining about the government. You know, they're complaining about their rations or something. We need to know that. And so this kind of Stasi snitch society is nothing new. What is new is the level that they've taken this to, where they've deputized these corporations and they have added the power of technology to this surveillance. I mean, what the Stasi was capable of doing was reprehensible, but it's nothing compared to what they're capable of doing with all the technology, the surveillance technology, and all the money, of course, that they're throwing to people as well. You know, we used to call those DVEs, we used to call that the PTA, didn't we?
Yeah.
Do they have something there about the school board stuff? Because that's become a hot topic.
You know, it should have. They forgot that. That'll probably be in the next one. You know, like, don't complain about the school board or you're another DVE. And now you talk about the money. Let me get to how the rubber meets the road, that they're going to do grant funding interventions here. It says DHS is prioritizing combating all forms of terrorism and targeted violence and increased information sharing as part of the national strategy for countering domestic terrorism. So they give it a fancy name. To this end, the department has taken several steps to include what? To include establishing a dedicated domestic terrorism branch, domestic terrorism, within the Office of Intelligence and Analysis, forming the Center for Prevention Program and Partnerships. Did you notice the three P's? So they gave that an acronym, parentheses, CP3, not C3PO, but CP3, forming the Center for Prevention Programs and Partnerships, parentheses, CP3. So that makes it more legitimate with the little acronym, the initials. To do what? To provide communities with tools to help individuals before they radicalize to violence. And every one of these bulletins I've gotten since the beginning of the year talks about radicalization to violence. It mentions January 6th. And here's how they're going to do it. By increasing investments in grant programs to strengthen nationwide capabilities to detect and protect against these threats. So what does that mean? That means sheriffs and police are going to get grant money so that when somebody identifies somebody saying something anti-authoritarian on social media, the sheriff can respond to that because there's strings attached to that grant money where you have to implement some federal priority. And that's another topic I could get into.
And if you didn't have any principles, you would look at this and you'd say, oh, grant, how do I get this, right? How can I sign up and get on the feeding trough for all this? You know, Sheriff, you talked about the CP3. They've also got a program that, interestingly enough, is centered around Microsoft. They put together this coalition. They call it the C2P. The C2PA, it's an alliance, but that's to basically identify everything, every document that you create, whether it is audio and video, whether it's an article, whether it's even a meme, they will identify it. And they put together this coalition between operating system manufacturers, between the CPU manufacturers, Intel, ARM, and others, and also with the people who are doing the apps, and they're in partnership with the BBC, the New York Times, and all the mainstream media, so they can identify you, and then everything that you produce will have an ID on it, so they can immediately shut that down if they see it coming from David Knight. That's where this is headed, and that's exactly what they want to do.
They used to use the euphemism metadata. Don't worry. You know, don't worry. It's like your data is mingled with everyone else. We can just tell if your phone went to some church meeting where there's a bunch of other people and you violated social distance. It's metadata. But you can tell from Governor Ducey's order, it's individually identifiable. And I know that from my time working with the feds. They had laws called like a CALEA, C-A-L-E-A, Communications Assistance to Law Enforcement Act, that says there's no liability to a private company that shares anything that the feds ask for without a warrant. If they share it to help law enforcement, doesn't even need to go through a FISA court or anything like that. And, you know, this whole metadata thing, you know, when the Patriot Act and NSA started looking at everybody's emails and doing text search for the content, sort of suggesting that we just look at it as a big blob like metadata, but that's not true. You know, they have fusion centers where that stuff is individually identified and passed to federal agencies, you know, the FBI, right, DEA, Marshals, Secret Service, and things
That's
like
right.
that.
William Binney, I talked to William Binney, the former global technical head of the NSA for quite some time. He became a whistleblower after 9/11, and he said the metadata actually allows them to algorithmically process this a lot easier than if they were listening to your phone messages and what your phone conversations, and if they were reading your text. He said the metadata actually is even more valuable for them because it's more easily fed into the algorithm. So this whole thing has been growing for a very long time. You're talking about how they allow this, saying that this is data that can be turned over to them by the corporations. That was what they were doing back in the 1960s. That's where we wound up with the FISA court. But they take all of this stuff, even the FISA Act, you know, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that was actually used to enable them to spy on Mr. and Mrs. Verizon, as Rand Paul put it. They turn everything upside down, inside out, but it's been a long train of progression to spy on everything that we do and to deputize and pay people.
Yeah, those FISA courts are totally in secret too. Everything's totally confidential. So they can say, well, we're looking at metadata through the Patriot Act, and the big federal super squirrel, secret squirrel agencies are looking at all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's being kept compartmentalized. But no, as soon as they want something, a mass dump with individually identifiable stuff, they go to a FISA court, and it doesn't have to just address somebody individually. It can say anybody that fits these parameters. We want an order to be able to turn over these things to anybody that fits these parameters. And you don't get to see those FISA court orders or the affidavits or the applications. There's no openness or transparency. There's no, there's not the adversarial process that you would have in a typical court procedure where both sides presents their case. I want this, the government wants this, but then some attorney on the other side for a defendant, says, well, no, it would be inappropriate. It would be a violation of privacy. So there's no adversarial process. They call it a court, but it's not a real court. They rubber stamp, anything they want. And of course, the feds have always used money too. Like, you remember the 55 mile an hour speed limit in the 1970s. You know, it's like, well, how did that come about? Well, it's not a mandate. You don't have to do it. Well, if you want your federal highway money, then you have to do it. So they're always dangling this in front of the states and say, this will be a freebie. You don't have to raise taxes. Are you really want to get thrown out of office as a governor or as a local politician by not enacting these federal mandates so that you can get the money? So, and I think we've come full circle back to the idea of the lesser magistrates. I mean, what's the answer? I mean, you have to have somebody at the local level that you can stare in the face and say, look, what are we going to do about this? And of course, me as a Christian, I don't see, violence as being an answer to this. I think looking more to opting out and telling people, look, if you opt out, I'm a placeholder for this position right now as sheriff. If you opt out, I'm not going to do anything to you. If you opt out to mask mandate, vaccine mandates, or anything else, I don't desire to do anything violent, to counter violence with violence, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, nothing like that. But just that I won't, in this position, I will be in place of somebody else who might have been more authoritarian, who would want to do something to you if you don't go along with these things.
That's right. And that's what we need at all these different levels. And so we're seeing that at, I think, the place where we're going to get somebody who is, and I'd like to have you on because I want to give people hope. I mean, there are other sheriffs out there that will stand for the rule of law, for the Constitution. We've seen, unfortunately, as a lot of this stuff was starting to roll out back in 2020, you would see videos that would start to surface on social media, and it would be from somebody who was in law enforcement, and they would say, I refuse to do this to people. I'm not going to be a part of this, and this is my farewell. I've been an officer for a long time, and they're going to fire me because I won't enforce these rules. And so we've seen this type of thing happening over and over again. The problem is, in most cases, these people are purged out. And so that's why it's important when we have a local elected office like sheriff or like mayor or city council, if we can get the people in who will hire these types of officers who are going to stand by the Constitution, who are not going to enforce this. They have to depend and they have to bribe you in order to get this enforced. And that's the important thing. And that's where the interposition is very, very important. So I just wanted to, that's one of the main reasons I it's interesting what you are showing people about what the federal government's designs are and what they're telling people about and how they're incentivizing all this stuff. But I want to give people an incentive to understand that if you can find the right people, just like Sheriff Hathaway's lived in that area for several generations, his family has been there. They have a commitment. They know the community, and they're not going to betray the people that are there. That's what we have to have. We have to build our societies from the ground up, and you're a great example of that, Sheriff.
Well, thank you. And, my perspective is all from the Christian perspective of how I make my decisions, I believe in market principles, price signals, the society gets what they want in the free market, and the Bible has the parable of the wheat and the tares growing side by side. It's not our job to go exterminate wicked people. Some people would like to interpret Romans chapter 13 to mean something like that. We need to sort of listen to politicians and say, those people over there on the other side of the hill, they're all, going to kill us. Like Hitler could say that Poland is a serious threat. We need to invade and kill and stomp, you know, and it's like there were nothing in strength compared to all his panzer divisions and whatnot. So, you know, it's not our job to, the disciples asked Jesus, you know, so, you know, it kind of is that our job to root out the wicked and deal with them in this life? No, you know, that's up to God, you know. Mm-hmm. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. He'll sort that out at Judgment Day. But we live side by side with people who give in to wickedness, to give in to the temptations, and it's not our job to attack and kill and stomp those people, you know, like,
that's right.
You know, as it says in the Sermon on the Mount, you know, pray for your enemies, love your enemies, turn the other cheek. If somebody forces you to go a mile, you know, says here, carry my burden a mile, you should go a second mile voluntarily, you know. That's if right. They take your coat, you should offer them your cloak too. So it's like that mentality of the Christian, but it doesn't say you're not living in fear. You don't have fear, but you don't give in to evil either. And like in my position, my only goal is to give people the option to not go along with this nonsense and to tell them I'm not going to compel anybody to do any of this stuff. I'm operating on Christian principles. And if we have the time, I'd like to kind of go back to something you started out this interview about the border issues.
Sure.
The border issue is such a huge topic that I usually don't get into it on podcast. I'm actually going to be on a panel forum with Scott Horton, the great anti-war, commentator at the State Libertarian Convention on January 16th in Tucson for the State Libertarian Party for Arizona, to actually try to help them come up with a concise statement about the immigration and about the border and about mm-hmm. those things. So it's a huge topic, and you know, libertarians disagree on both sides of that topic. But if I can just say some things, we have to be careful. We have to be careful what we say. Like conservatives and libertarians have been saying for the past year and a half, well, all these people come across the border without masks, without PCR tests, without vaccines, without. guess what? They finally this week opened up the border to the people who have legal documents in Mexico. There's a lot of people that have visas in Mexico. They haven't been allowed to cross and shop for the past year and a half.
Yeah.
But guess what they did? The state will always look at the weak point to think like, where can we clamp down on a vaccine mandate? So you know what they did? They saw the right, the people on the right don't object to vaccine or mask mandates on people coming from other countries. The people on the left want everybody to wear a mask and have a vaccine. So there's no pushback here. So what do? On December 8th, they allowed people to start coming in shopping, the ones that have legal papers from Mexico. But they said, you have to be vaccinated.
Yeah.
And you have to have proof of vaccination.
Wow.
So you have to be careful what you ask for. You know, like mm-hmm. when people push back on saying, well, all these people from Mexico, they're not PCR tested. They might be carrying COVID and infecting all of us. But on the other side of the mouth, those people are saying it's a scamdemic. It's fake. The COVID virus has never been isolated. Delta variant has never been isolated. But when it comes to like foreigners saying, well, they're coming across and they're not vaccinated and not wearing masks. So the feds detect that thing, that there will be no pushback from the right or the left.
That's right.
Only a libertarian would notice this phenomena. And so they require everybody coming from Canada or Mexico starting this week. Now they're allowing people to come into shop that have B1 or B2 visas. So these are people who have papers. But you have to show vaccination status. Why? Because they sense that nobody will push back. And now that's the nose of the camel's nose under the tent.
That's right.
Is now you have a federal agency making a vaccine mandate on masses of people, on thousands of people, and making them show their papers and show proof of vaccination status. So,
and I've seen something like that when it comes to illegal immigration, which again, you know, the Republicans want cheap workers and the Democrats want available voters. And so you have this been floating around for quite some time, the idea that everybody should have to get permission from Washington before they get a job. And that's kind of being promoted from the right as a means to control immigration. They don't right. get to the source of this, which is the incentivization or the yeah. welfare state or something like that. Instead, they focus on something that is off to the side. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, but I don't want to have Washington's permission to get a job. And that's what's basically going to happen.
Yeah.
So you're having your trade, your legitimate legal trade being shut down with vaccine mandates. That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. And then what they should do, the whole immigration thing, what they should do, there should be no magnets.
That's right.
To immigration. No Section 8 housing, no food stamps, you know, no welfare, no free hospitalization, you know, free, you know, public education where, and then it would be down to like people say, well, they're all coming here to get on the welfare rolls or to vote for the Democrat Party, to vote for socialism. Well, get the root of the problem is getting rid of the magnet that would attract anybody here for nefarious reasons. And if I can, if we have time, touch on one more thing that's related to the border, but it's kind of unrelated to what we're talking about. You know, with all Trump's walls and things like that, and encouraging, you know, everybody goes through the legal ports of entry. Guess what's happened in the last 10 years? Like the biggest problem with the Berlin Wall was keeping people from leaving the country.
That's right.
Keeping people from leaving. Guess
what
Ron
Paul used to always say. He said, remember, if you put a wall up, that can keep you from getting out. So is that what's happening now?
Yeah. 10 years ago, this started. I was the head of one of the federal agencies here on the border, federal law enforcement agencies. They started a pilot program of searching people leaving the United States, U.S. officers searching people leaving the United States, occasionally, sporadically, every other car. And I asked at the time the port director, what legal authority do you do this under? They said, well, we have border search authority to search. But I told him, I thought that was for people coming in. He goes, no, well, we define it to mean anybody at the border. So when you're going into Mexico, they reach in and they take money, even if it's under the CTR valuation reporting limit of $10,000 for incoming, it'd be $1,000, $2,000. They just grab people's money at the border and then do it under civil asset forfeiture. Mm. Don't file any charges, and you have to file a claim and cost bond to contest that to prove that it's from a legitimate source.
Wow.
You're not a drug dealer returning that to Mexico. So that was a pilot program 10 years ago. Guess what? Now, you know, you talk about making the walls, you know, more where people can't move. Now it's permanent. They've built a permanent structure. It used to be just a shade awning in the southbound lanes, but now you have CBP officers full-time inspecting cars going into Mexico here in my town. So if you're looking to expatriate from the U.S. and take your gold coins or your money with you, they're actually making it now harder to leave the U.S. Where you're getting searched by American authorities as you leave the U.S. So this is just one of those things you have to be aware of when you start saying, let's shut down the whole border and make everybody go through the official, you know, checkpoints, the official inspection stations. They're searching people that are leaving now and taking money.
Yeah,
and, you know,
I haven't gone to Mexico, but I remember when we went into Canada and it was there were only, you know, the Canadians would check you when you came into Canada and the Americans would check you when you came back into America. They were checking people
and, you
when
know,
you went out.
And now it's like the Border Patrol, they'll pull me over and interrogate me and make me sit by the side of the road. And I'm obviously a gringo, 6 feet, 4 inches tall, 240 pounds, American driver's license, American license plates on my car. But I won't argue with them and be contrarian. That's not my nature. But they've told me they have the constitutional authority to do that. They've come and swarmed me and pulled guns on me and my children on our own ranch land and say, and when I've been detained for like half an hour at a time, I'll say like, well, what authority do you have for this? We have extended border search authority within 100 miles of the U.S. border. We can search anybody. The Supreme Court's given us that authority. And people may not realize this, but 2/3 of the American population lives within 100 miles of the border. So here, they don't need PC, and they've told me we don't need probable cause. We have extended border search authority within 100 miles of the border. So I know every church across the U.S. says, you know, pray for the Border Patrol. They have them in their church bulletins. But here, we live in a police state. Mm-hmm. The federal agents outnumber local officers 30-1. We have the biggest Border Patrol office in the nation in my county, smallest county in Arizona, and we have the third biggest Border Patrol office in the nation. We have the largest ports of entry of any county in Arizona. We have a very large DEA office, ICE office, HSI, Forest Service, other federal agencies here. And like I say, the federal agents outnumber 30 to 1, not counting when the National Guard troops are here as well. And there, it really is kind of a constitution-free zone where you can just be pulled over. Like I was sitting in a creek on ranch land that I own in the bottom of the creek playing with my sons. And I hear sounds in the bushes. Border Patrol swarms up on me, points guns at us and says, "What are you doing here? You shouldn't be here." And I said, "Well, I own this. This has been in my family, this property, since before Arizona was a state, since the 1800s. They go, "No, you don't own it. This isn't your land. This is dangerous. You shouldn't be here." And I had a model 1911 45 automatic in my waistband behind me. I was sitting down in the creek with my boys digging in the water on our ranch. And I didn't dare stand up. I think, I'm going to get shot. So people that just think that a police state down here on the border is a good idea, you should witness it yourself. Witness the, you know, it's not a market signal. It's not a price signal. The number of federal agents here doesn't equate to the price signals from the market of how much demand there is for that. So anyway, it's a big topic.
Yeah,
and it's not, amazing. It's something.
Well, people need to understand.
If we ever talked about this, David, we'd have to pray for it and have a lot of grace, because we may have different opinions on this. Mine is kind of just driven purely from Christian perspective and thinking, you know.
I agree. It's been fascinating talking to you, Sheriff David Hathaway. Thank you so much, sir, for what you're doing and for the information. Thank you. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.